I've decided to go into a neighborhood and put flyers on their door, promoting a paint sale or my store. I can do that without having to go to Pete and get a peddler's permit, because I have a business license in the city that I can...
The question is getting a permit to do it.
And they're getting the permits for, it's basically, you fill a form out, who are you, what's your address, and who will be...
Well, these people were not Allen.
Who will be representing your company.
Okay. Very good. Do we have someone else that wants to speak?
Yes, we do.
Okay, on the subject?
Yeah, I think...
Susan DeBruel.
Susan, come on up.
I'm Susan DeBruel, and I live at 1347 Pinehurst Avenue. My only concern about this, and I understand everybody's concern, my mother was taken advantage of by someone who did one of the driveway paving things, which ended up cracking and peeling off in about 6 months. So I understand that. But I also feel that... by requiring everyone to have a background check, I know that there are some people who have reformed their lives and really may have moved to Aiken and are doing okay, and they're working in yard services or what have you, and might have that small business that you're talking about, and don't want their past dredged up. And I can understand spending money to let the public know that we do have a peddling permit policy. Law mm-hmm. policy, mm-hmm. and that if someone comes to your door, you certainly should and ought to ask for their permit, and if they don't have one, just shut the door. Mm-hmm. I don't open my door to anyone that I don't want there, and we've had people in our neighborhood wandering around selling this or doing that, or we've got a business doing such and such, and if I don't want to talk to them, I just don't open the door. I don't go any further than the storm door. So I think an awareness of that we have a peddling policy, I think running a background check on anybody and everybody that applies for the peddler's permit is a little bit draconian, and I wouldn't be in favor of it.
Now, so. Susan, this my understanding, maybe I'm understanding it wrong, but all right, let's say if someone is in the landscape business in the city of Aiken, and
they
have a business license, then they have a right to go out and solicit business anywhere within the city.
Right, but what about the 16 or 17-year-old boy down the street that comes and rakes yards in the neighborhood? I mean, legally, he should have a peddling permit, but if everybody in the neighborhood knows him or somebody recommends him to me, I'm liable to use him, and I'm not going to ask him, does he have a peddling permit?
Well, the word of mouth would be different, though, Susan, than this particular code section. This is talking about somebody that's going out and actually soliciting.
What is the cost to the city of running a background check?
Nothing. Yeah, we have the software in place already.
But suppose you have a rapist or somebody that's coming in. I'm here. Okay. Into your neighborhood to... or somebody could do you harm. Don't you think it'd be good to first check them out and see, and so that Pete knows and
but I understand that. I worry about more what goes on at my house when I'm not there, about breaking and entering, or teenagers coming through the neighborhood that don't belong there, or home invasion. I mean, that concerns me a whole lot more than somebody coming and knocking on my door to sell me dictionaries or... You know, is this going to affect the people that put the books in the schools and the banks and the businesses? Are they going to have background checks? I mean, because I don't know if they have a business license to do that, because they travel all over the county and the state. The reading is fun.
Are they selling these books that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they need a business license if they're doing it in the city.
That's
well,
what
I don't
did.
Know.
That's what we have done.
And you don't always know whether they do unless somebody asks a question.
Well, that's it. So
it's up to us to do that, I guess, if we have a question. But
anyway, that was just my concern. I just think that, I don't know, it's just a... It's meddling with the peddling, I think. And I'm a senior citizen, too, by the way.
It's pretty good.
maybe it wouldn't apply to all applications, but, and Pete needs to answer to this, but maybe in the type that have a vehicle that they're in, not a bicycle or walking on foot, but wouldn't they come in a vehicle that they have some type of sticker like we do as the contractors do that gives your guys riding by the neighborhood to see?
We could certainly look at that.
Some of them don't have a car.
The way we want
yeah.
it,
right.
Some might be on bicycles or even walking.
I know it wouldn't apply at all.
Yeah. They'll have the permit.
Yeah. And every person will have a permit?
Correct. Right.
Every.
Right.
There's a company and they have five people going door to door. That person would have people. Yeah. This person would have a permit in his hand, in his possession. Thank you.
Let me ask you this, maybe if, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around this thing, if let's say there's three doors down a neighbor's 16-year-old boy that mows lawns on the street, and I call him and say, I want you to come down here and mow my lawn. Now, I don't know if he has a business license or not, but he's 16 years old. I mean, he's growing up. He might charge $10 or $12 to mow a lawn. But now, how does this apply to that?
You invited him on your property.
Yes.
Paragraph A says if you invite him on your property, it's okay.
Okay. So that's out.
Doesn't apply.
Okay. That's out. Okay.
Right. The pressure washer guy.
Yes.
If you invite him to come pressure wash your house, it doesn't apply to him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
That's a good point.
All right. That's the difference.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on this thing?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do we have a motion and a second?
You do.
We do already? We certainly
yes.
do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All in favor? Show of hands, please. Okay. Passes unanimously. All right. Petitions. Number one, request by Jenny Murphy of Dumbarton Oaks to add a mini garden area to the entrance parkway of Dumbarton Oaks subdivision.
Thank you, Mayor. Back in December of last year, Ms. Murphy received permission to put two concrete benches in the Boardman Road Parkway of Dumbarton Oaks. She contacted our office early last week and wants to place the round and square stones that you have the photographs of. She's actually painted the benches now and the stones to all be the same color, and she's just asking for permission to place that in the right-of-way. She does have to get a separate permission from SCDOT for those to remain. And this okay. is for council consideration is approval of the placement of those square and round blocks in the Dumbarton Oaks entrance parkway.
Okay.
I move we approve this. They've worked so hard in that.
Second.
Community.
Okay. She was a smart lady.
Yes.
Giving us a picture. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. That's it, isn't it?
That's all
right. We are adjourned. Well, that made it move pretty fast.
Well, once we got rid of Mrs. Scotland, you sent me a letter about the volunteer luncheon.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council meeting on March 28, 2011. We're pleased to have everyone here. And just to tell you, if during the course of our agenda, if someone wants to speak, you certainly will be able to do that. We want you to do that. Just raise your hand at the appropriate time, and we'll ask you to come up to the mic and just give us your name. And that's all you have to do. But thank you for being with us. As we begin, we'll have council prayer and pledge of allegiance.
May we pray. Almighty God, as you look down upon us tonight as we do conduct the business of the city of Aiken, we pray for your guiding hand, your imparting of wisdom so that we might do what is right and what is just and what is fair. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary for the agenda this evening?
There was an item in city manager's issues and answers talking about the sidewalks in Crossland Park, and I would just like maybe a two-sentence explanation at some time about the Safe Route to Schools grant.
That was a grant for us to install sidewalks and lighting in Crossland Park. You have several students who ride the bus around to the elementary
and it was specific
school.
To Crossland Park?
This particular grant was to provide access to the school ground.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have. No changes then.
Okay, all right.
Will we accept the agenda as submitted?
Yes, yes. Do we have a motion and second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. The minutes of the last meeting, consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of March 14th, 2011. Any discussion necessary? If not, do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under presentations, we have one this evening, and Roger Dyer is with us, our traffic engineer for services, levels of service report, and we appreciate Roger being with us this evening. Mr. Pierce, do you have anything to add to that?
Mayor, just as we provided in the memo that I sent out to council and that we published, Roger is on retainer to us. He's been working with us for 9 years. He prepared the 2006, 2008, and then most recently a 2010 traffic count updates. And then he's prepared a level of service report that he has here tonight. For council's information, the color map that we provided you in the packet, the colors are a little bit skewed, and that's why Roger's brought with us tonight this display. And he's going to talk to you about not only what the service he's been providing you for this nine-year time, but then also talk about some of the more significant findings in this most recent level of service survey. Roger,
thank you. Thank you. Mayor Cavanaugh, members of council, I want to thank you for having the opportunity to get to speak with you tonight. Really enjoy coming down here and visiting and working for the City of Aiken. What I'd like to do is give you just a brief discussion or description of some of the things that I've worked on for you going back the last 8-9 years. I actually did some work for you before that when I was with a larger firm. Going all the way back to the year 2000. So I guess we're looking closer maybe to 10, almost 11 years now. Generally, the work that I've done has been at the direction of the director of planning or the city manager or the director of public safety. One of the things we worked on back in the 02, 03, 04 time frame was the development of the traffic management ordinance. And, of course, that ordinance guides the and sets the requirements for traffic impact studies that are done for new developments. We also worked on the traffic impact fee, which was considered back in 2002 and reconsidered again to some extent back in 2006. And that involved a potential program that would look at impact fees for developments to provide funding for transportation and improvement projects. About every 2 years, going back to 04, we've looked at the level of service for the major streets in the city. We did that in 04, 06, 08, and the latest effort, the traffic counts were done in 2010, and it's taken us to into 11 now to get the report finished and do some tweaking and make some changes requested by the city. We've been involved with some of the major road corridor studies that have gone on. The study to look at a connector from Whiskey Road to Silver Bluff, involved in the consultant selection, in reviewing the technical work of the consultants, the documentation, the reports, just generally
assisting the planning department with that effort. Similar work for the study that was done for the connector from Whiskey over to Powderhouse Road, again assisted with consultant selection and oversight of the consultant's work. Currently, now, we're assisting with some review activities and some technical assistance with the North Side Area Road Study that's now underway, has been for quite some time, about a year, almost a year. And a variety of things we've done there to assist. Attended a lot of meetings with the consultant, reviewed and provided some technical data, that sort of thing. I've gone over that type of information with the city staff. One of the studies that we did on our own was the study of the connection between Whiskey Road and Silver Bluff, utilizing Fabian. That effort was done back, I think, in 04, 05. And it resulted in some of the improvements that were made, including eventually the new signal that was put in at Silver Bluff and Old Town. There's been a number of other smaller connector type studies where we looked at the feasibility and the benefits of providing some smaller connectors from some of the commercial properties down in the Whiskey Road corridor. I mentioned the traffic signal at Silver Bluff and the connector. That was one of the signal warrant studies that we did. There's a very detailed, involved process you have to go through to get a signal approved through state DOT. The first step in that process is what they call a signal warrant study. Requires traffic counts and observations of traffic, looking at the safety data, and writing a report with a recommendation. So that was one of the signal warrant studies that we did. This past year, we did a signal warrant study for the intersection of Silver Bluff Road at Richardson's Lake Road. I think there's still some activities going on with that study. We've done a number of traffic operational studies. In other words, looking not just from a planning standpoint, but looking from the standpoint of how the road system, the intersections, the traffic signals, the signs and markings are actually working or operating. One of those we did was East Pine Log Road at Collier. And that came through as a request from the Public Safety Department. And we eventually did get approval from state DOT to add that new left turn arrow that was recently put in there at the signal. There were, of course, problems with the school activities there at school take-in and dismissal time. I think the left turn arrow has been beneficial there. But that's an example of some of the traffic operational studies that we've done. We did a number of analytical studies looking at the different options for adding a right turn lane on Silver Bluff Road at Doherty. And, of course, eventually the plan that DOT eventually approved, of course, has just recently been implemented out there. We did the study of Eastgate Drive at the mall access and the access across the way that goes into the shopping center where the Publix is. And that was the precursor to the roundabout. And the recommendations that we made from that study indicated we thought a roundabout could work there, and of course it's now been installed and looks very good and seems to be working pretty well. So that's another example of a traffic operational study that we did that addressed a traffic flow and a planning issue. I mentioned earlier about the traffic impact studies, and we'll touch on that again maybe here in a few minutes, but I also do the review of any traffic impact studies that are turned in for new developments in the city, whether they be residential, commercial, whatever it may be. And over the years since that requirement has been in place, there's been a little over 20 of those studies that have been done and submitted to the city. Each one of those has to be carefully reviewed. Sometimes there's some back and forth with the engineer or the planner who has done the study. We ask them to correct things or address things or handle things in a way that needs to be handled. Usually it's a good process back and forth. We sometimes learn from each other. And we think we've ended up having some good high-quality studies that have eventually been approved by the city. Some of those would include, for example, the new convenience store up on Edgefield Highway.
There were some issues there that were addressed in the traffic impact study. The new restaurant, the new Cracker Barrel proposed on Whiskey Road, that's another example where there was an impact study that was done by a private engineer for the developer. I did the review. We did the review for the staff, made recommendations, and things that sometimes go beyond the report itself. Circulation on the site, the need for additional traffic control. So for example, the one with the Cracker Barrel, that one's pretty obvious that you're going to need to revise the traffic signal, but how do you do it? How many lanes do you need? That sort of thing. So there are things that go beyond just the numbers in the plans or in the reports that are turned in. So we do assist the city with that. There have been some occasions where we've looked at site plan review. I'll get a call on occasion from Public Works or from the planning department saying, what do you think about this plan? Do you see a concern with this particular driveway? There's been a couple where there's been difficulties with access because of the inability to get the necessary site distance looking from a driveway exit. There have been some cases where I've done some measurements, made some reviews, and made some recommendations to city staff regarding site plans and access. The traffic signal system is an area where I've gotten more involved here just in the past year. The city took on the responsibility of maintaining a number of traffic signals on the state DOT road system. And of course, in exchange for that, there's some reimbursement money that comes from DOT. And they mandate that you have a registered professional engineer, either on staff or on retainer or on call, to be involved with the management of those activities. And so just recently, been asked to take on that additional the additional duty. One thing I might mention, I should have mentioned maybe from the start, prior to becoming full-time consultant about 5 years ago, I did it part-time for a while, but prior to that, I had about 25-plus years in state and local government. About seven of those with state DOT down in Charleston, in the district down there. Kind of cut my teeth on traffic operations and traffic studies and traffic signals down in the Charleston area back in the late 80s and early 90s. And then the remainder of my government time was with cities. Worked for several cities here in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Florida. So I've kind of been in the trenches and kind of been there with the folks, typically either in public safety or public works departments that actually get things done. And I hope that gives me a better and a little bit different perspective from the engineering standpoint, because I've also been involved in the day-to-day operations on the maintenance and the budget side from government as well. Any changes that are made into the future on signals in the city, the state agreement would require that those changes be recommended and approved by a registered engineer before being implemented, and that's one of the reasons that the state mandates that they have an engineer, but that every city that does signal maintenance have a registered engineer either on staff or on call. What I'd like to do now, just for a few minutes, is talk briefly about the year 2010 level service report. I think you have a copy, maybe of the latest version, and a lot of information, a lot of numbers there, and I'll certainly just try to hit the highlights and the things that I think are most important, but I know you may have some questions of your own about the report and or about any of the other items that I've talked about that I've worked on, and I'd certainly be glad to address those as well. And just real briefly, when we talk about level service, we're talking about a measure of the quality of the traffic flow on the street system here in the city. The system that we look at is not every street in the city. The cost to collect detailed data for every street in the city would just be exorbitant and would just be beyond probably what you really need to look at anyway. So we only look at the major streets, and I think the first figure in your
in your report, not the table, but I think the first figure shows the major streets in the city. There's about 62, I think it is, miles of street that we have been doing the level service analysis on for the past 6 or 8 years. And what we have looked at, or what was settled upon a number of years ago to use as the measure of level service, is the average annual daily traffic compared to the capacity on a daily basis of each segment of road. Now, or street, sometimes a segment is just a couple blocks. We try to use a good rational break point for the segments. Usually it's traffic signals, sometimes it's something else. So we're looking at the percentage of the capacity that is being used by the average daily traffic. So the levels of service go from A to F. Of course, A is the best. F is failing, just like in school. What we call level service A is a situation where less than about 30% of the daily capacity is being used. A B is from 30 to about 50% of the available capacity. C is from 50 to 70. D is from 70 to 90. And E is from 90 up to 100. And in an F situation is a situation where, from a practical standpoint, we're over capacity and carrying more traffic than we should be carrying on a daily basis. So we would say that level service A is excellent. It's a situation where there's very few cars that pass you or that you have to pass. Your freedom of movement from one lane to another is not really restricted. You have almost no delays, and you can drive at a speed that's pretty close, or maybe in some cases even exceeds the posted speed limit. As you go from level service A to B to C, your freedom of mobility and your ability to change lanes and the frequency with which there's someone in front of you or behind you or beside you as you drive, those numbers increase. And consequently, your speed typically goes down, and typically your delay goes up. Now, there's some very complex mathematical formulas. I won't go into any of that stuff at all, but generally speaking, that's the way it works. It's normally expected that you're going to have level service D. You'd like to have C or better everywhere, but when you get into an urban area, even one that's not a larger urban area, but one that's a growing urban area like Aiken, you have to expect you're going to have some D's. What you like to avoid are the E's and F's. Now, in addition to the thinking about the level service based on the average annual daily traffic, keep in mind that there are going to be times of the day, the peak hours, typically, most of the time, morning and afternoon, sometimes, depending upon where you are, midday, sometimes on a Saturday, when you'll have a level service that's better or worse than what you see in the chart or in the table or on the map, either in your handout or the map down here. And that's because the fluctuations of traffic throughout the day, throughout the week, and then even throughout the different seasons of the year. So, again, just keep in mind this is based on the average annual daily traffic. When we put out our count machines and collect the traffic information, we send it to state DOT. They come back and tell us, based on the seasonal factors and the day of the week factors, they come back and tell us what the annual average number would be based on the numbers that we collected. So with that, it doesn't really matter what time of the year you do the counts. They're going to be adjusted to essentially normalize the numbers across the year. Intersections a lot of times can have levels of service, again, that are better or worse than what we're showing on the graph or the table or the figure. And that's because the definition of a level service at an intersection is different than this definition that we're using. And I, again, won't go into all that detail unless you want to ask a question, or we can talk about it later. But intersections are just different animals, and to keep the amount of data collection manageable and to keep the costs manageable, a number of years back the decision was made to go with this analysis, which is looking at the segments or the sections of road from one major crossroad to another.
couple things we can glean from the table in your handout. About one quarter of the mileage that was studied, and again, that's just major streets in the city, about one quarter of that mileage has level service that's either D or E or F. Now, I don't have figures that compare that exactly to other communities that are exactly like Aiken or very similar to Aiken. That's something we can look into and try to find out if you'd like to find that out at some point. I think it's a fairly significant amount, personally. Some of the D's are actually pretty close to being E's. For example, Hitchcock Parkway between Bibble and Augusta Road, the ratio there is 86%, and that's just very close to going from a level D to a level E. If you look at the total miles of travel on the segments that have D, E, or F, that number goes up. Instead of being 25%, it comes out to be about 38%. So that's a fairly large percentage of the street mileage in the city has travel that's in the D, E, or F category. Within your report, within your handout, there is a listing of the locations that had the highest volume increases over the past couple of years. And the 10 of those that had the highest numbers may be worth a look. Hitchcock Parkway between Augusta Road and Richland Avenue had the largest actual total volume increase, not percentage, but the total number increase. That was 5,200. University Parkway from Medical Park Drive up to University Lane had 4,700. Richland Avenue from Gregg to Valley Road had 4,300. So you can see there's some big increases out in that area, and it's, of course, all due to the commercial development that's happened out that way. Down on Whiskey Road, down on the south end, there's actually some pretty high increases down there. Now, between Civil Drive and Powder House, for example, the numerical increase was 2,800 average annual daily traffic. That's pretty substantial, and that indicates additional travel happening from the south end of the county up towards the commercial areas. A couple other just quick items we could talk about. The trend from 06 to 08, from 2006 to 2008, the total amount of travel was up almost 13% in that two-year period. That's pretty healthy. That's, you know, over 6% a year. The last 2 years, from 08 to 2010, we're showing a decline of a little over 4%. And that's calculated by taking the length of each segment and the average daily traffic and multiplying it out for a 365-day period. If you look at the overall trend from 06 to 2010, it's still an increase of a little over 5%. It actually came out 5.4. And if you put that on an annual basis, that's 1.3%+ per year. So there were some big increases going on from 06 up to 08, some declines from 08 to 2010. But even with those declines in place, still a little bit over a 5% increase in total travel going back to 2006. We probably still have some things that the planning department may want me to do or want us to do, looking at some of these trends or some of the information in the report. So there may be some other things that we'll do, Mr. Evans, at some point. With that, I'd be glad to try to answer any questions that you may have about the level service analysis or anything else that I mentioned earlier.
I have several questions, if you don't mind. The traffic management ordinance is always a tough issue, trying to determine how far away the impact should be from whatever a project is that generates traffic. And I think our current traffic management ordinance is it 5 miles?
No.
Do you know?
No, sir.
You don't know, or
no, sir. It's not. Okay. It's not really that far. No, sir.
It's not that far.
No, sir.
I know it came up when they were talking about putting the Walmart in, the Sam's Club in, I guess, across from Target, and that was an excellent case of looking at how far the impact should be. I mean, I think we can all agree if they had to put Sam's Club there, the traffic would have been impacted probably at least down to down to Pine Log on Whiskey. Are you satisfied that the distance that we have in our traffic management ordinance right now is satisfactory for the community, given now your 2010 numbers?
Well, first, the ordinance is very simply written, very simply put together. When this was put together a number of years ago, we took a look at what a lot of communities all around the state and the country really were doing. And we tried to keep it as simple as possible, for lots of reasons. One being just administering it and looking at the cost of getting studies done and the cost of reviewing the studies, et cetera. So there are a number of communities that will go down to very small numbers, like 5 or 10% of the traffic that's generated by a new site. And they'll say that you have to go as far away as you have to go until you've handled all but 5 or 10% of the traffic that you've created. And that seemed to be pretty inordinate, seemed to be pretty onerous requirement. The one that's in place here for most of the studies that's done is only a quarter of a mile. Now, sometimes that might include 2 or 3 signals upstream or downstream from a site, sometimes less or more. Developments that have larger predicted volume of traffic go out to a half a mile. But there's also a provision in the ordinance that gives the flexibility back to the city staff and the director of planning. And in individual cases, if a study scope needs to be expanded, then that can happen. And there have been some cases where that has occurred.
Well, the frustration is like, you know, when I ran on a controlled growth, managed growth platform, and I got elected, and here came the recession, and there went the growth. So we didn't have any issues, but and I can think of projects. I voted against the Walgreens for traffic purposes, and that happens to be one of the worst intersections in town. I voted against the construction on Silver Bluff that's being taken right now, and that is a bad area for traffic, if you would. I expressed some concerns, significant concerns, although I voted for the new restaurant. But my gosh, we're going to put that restaurant up, and we're going to go into level E and F areas, and we're going to come out of level E and F areas. Do you ever get the point? Have you ever gotten to the point in your, I think you said almost 25, 30 years, where traffic says it's not a good thing to do? Or do you just, I mean, as we've just continued to press on and consider the traffic study almost a formality. I mean, it doesn't get a lot of credibility. Not credibility, respect, let's put it this way.
Well, I can assure you that those studies get scrutinized very carefully by me and by the staff. And there have been some occasions, not necessarily here, but other places, where we just had to tell someone, you know, this just will not work. Unless you do X, Y, or Z, you can't make this work. And I've seen cases where a revision will be made to a plan in order to get the trip generation down to a level that could be accommodated. And I think that's a provision that's within the ordinance as it currently stands now. I believe I'm correct on that. One thing I want to stress, the level service report that we just talked about briefly a moment ago, this is a tool. This is a planning tool, and it's a traffic operations tool, and it's for, you know, whatever use the city wants to make of it. It's a tool to help you with planning transportation needs and implementing improvements and in controlling access. Now, I can't stress enough how important management of traffic access is. And a couple of locations you've mentioned, and of course hindsight's 2020, nobody has a crystal ball, but if you look back 25, 30, 35 years ago, if you just had access management in place, can you imagine how different things would be? So again,
with due respect, we have an access management ordinance. I've never once seen a package come where the director, planning director, hadn't asked for it to be waived. So we've never really put it into effect. The Richland University is particularly onerous because at the time we were looking at Walgreens, unbeknownst to all of us, I think, or at least unbeknownst to me, they were talking about putting a Dunkin' Donuts and a Quiznos submarine there, all within zoning, so it didn't even have to come to us. But added traffic to that intersection. So I guess my concern is, how do we use this? I mean, you're telling us that there are intersections that are D and E and F, and how do we use this to help mitigate the traffic? I mean, everybody agrees Whiskey Road is a mess, but yet we continue to build on Whiskey Road. I know that's more political than...
Well, just about all the impacts, well, all the impact studies have to have recommendations from the person, the firm that did the preparation of the report of how they would mitigate the impacts. And sometimes that includes turning lanes, sometimes it may be traffic signals, sometimes it may be changing a phasing to a traffic signal. That could take a lot of different forms. And again, the ordinance and the level service study, these are tools that you have to use by the city staff in reviewing these new developments that come in.
Okay. And as I said in my email, I would renew my call that we have a traffic engineer, someone of your qualifications, on staff full-time. I'm not sure what we spent, city manager, on the on traffic consultant last year, and we've talked about this offline, but I honestly hope that someday we get to the point of seriously considering a full-time traffic engineer, because the consultant can only work on projects that we ask the consultant to work on. If somebody were on the staff, there could be some independent actions that would be done, because we certainly hear it. The traffic lights downtown, for example, I'm not sure yet the downtown portion has been resolved, but I've had complaints because it's taking too long on Chesterfield, for example, to go through the red light. The light is red, there's no traffic, but it's still red, and the cameras are supposed to be there, and it's not supposed to work that way, and it does. And I know we had some issues with our new InSync system, but I know they're being resolved, and I haven't had any concerns about that since. But I would renew my call for a full-time traffic engineer on staff, and perhaps at some point in time we could bring that to a vote in the council, and let me get a sense of who agrees with me and who doesn't on the traffic engineer issue. It's a very, very comprehensive study. Thank you. Very well done.
We spent approximately $49,000 for the consultant work, so obviously we have to look at the marketplace and the benefits, and at this point it just hasn't seemed cost-effective to have a full-time position. But we're not planning on adding any full-time positions in the budget this year, as we haven't done that.
Ms. Glavin, I'll defer to you. Ms. Glavin, you had a question?
I did have a question for Roger about the a statement I read in the report. And I want to call your attention to the level of service on Hitchcock Parkway, which is number 2, and Hounds Lake and Huntsman, where it's 19,400.
Yes,
on
ma'am.
Page 38. And then I go over to table 2, where it says York Street and Aldridge, and it's 20,200. On one, the level of service is an E, and the other, it's a C. And I think I just need you to explain to me the difference. The statement says something that the SCDOT does not divulge how they come up with the AADT, and maybe that has something to do with it, but if you could explain to me the difference in the two. The numbers are the same almost, and yet the level of service is probably twice as high on the other.
But York Street, if I'm not mistaken, is a four-lane facility.
It's four
lanes each direction. Mm-hmm. And the part of the parkway you're talking about is only one in each direction. So when we do the capacity, we take into account the number of lanes in each direction,
okay,
the presence of left turn lanes, the number of signals per mile, a whole bunch of things that go into that calculation.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what you're looking at there is two streets have about the same volume of traffic, but one's got more lanes. And so when you
so it doesn't take into consideration the size of the road that's there. It's just the number of cars you're counting.
Well, when we do the counts, we're just counting the number of cars, but
okay. Everything
else being equal, capacity of a four-lane road is going to be roughly the capacity, twice the capacity of a two-lane road. Now, that'll vary with a lot of other factors, but that's what you're looking at there, is the road's just bigger, just a bigger pipe to carry more water.
Mm-hmm.
You want to compare it to flow of water.
So the level of service is that, but the AADT is something totally different and it doesn't take into consideration the number of lanes on the road, is what you're telling me.
The AADT is just the average annual traffic. It's just the number of cars, trucks that go up and down the street.
Okay. I do want to thank you for your service. I think you've been, in the years since you've been coming here, I've always appreciated the work that you've done. And
thank you.
Thank you for that.
Roger, we have an influx of a lot of newcomers in this town that have moved from other parts of the country here. And I hear constantly that given where they came from, we have very little traffic concerns. That a lot of what we're experiencing could be mitigated by doing the turn lanes and just redirecting some traffic flow. And then I hear from folks who are accustomed to larger cities like Atlanta, a lot of traffic. They come here and they get spoiled. And if they can't get where they want to in 5 minutes or less, north to south, then there's a big traffic problem. And personally, I get irritated because I don't leave my job on time to go to an appointment. And I want to get across town very quickly without Chief Fromer's folks stopping me because I haven't given myself adequate time. We're experiencing, and not to put any mild stand on this, but I'm just wondering how acute is the problem given the size of Aiken. And I recognize you've got your E and F, and there are some areas that, given the traffic numbers, they're higher. But I'm just wondering right now whether we could remedy a lot of what we're doing based on turning lanes and easing the traffic flow and the signal lights versus, as one of the council members said, wanting a full-time person on board. I don't personally think as a council member we're ready for that yet, but whether we can mitigate a lot of concerns there.
Well, covered a lot of territory there. On the level of service, it does matter what you're used to and what you want.
Okay.
It also matters what resources you have to provide that level. And if you want to simply say, we want level service A, B, or C everywhere, I mean, you can make that happen. Of course, there's a significant cost to do that. But it does matter a lot what your expectations are.
So it's personally our expectation as to what we want versus trying to conform to the public's views.
Well, that's...
It's a balance there.
It is. Again, you have to balance resources. You know, the first priority is always safety.
Right.
You've got locations where you've got collisions happening, people getting hurt, you've got to do something about that.
Right.
And then the second priority, in my mind anyway, becomes ease of travel, congestion, delay, that sort of thing. And then just, I guess the third one is kind of connectivity. And then the fourth one is, what are you doing to your neighborhood? So you've got to balance it all together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can go too far on one and not enough on the other. So you've got to try to keep all these things sort of balanced. It really gets back to, you know, what do you want and what can you afford to do? Just like our own, you know, budgets at home, mm-hmm. remodel the kitchen. Well, certain things you do, certain things you can't. So that's one aspect of it. There are places where turn lanes would be very beneficial. And we've looked at some of those. And, you know, for example, the one down at Silver Bluff and Doherty. Mm-hmm. A lot of back and forth with state DOT. How to get that done. We had an idea we thought would have worked that maybe could have been done a little quicker. DOT didn't want to do that. So it was a back and forth exercise. Finally, they came up with funding, and this is what we're going to do. There are a lot of places like that where that is exactly the kind of thing that can be done. The access management, the access control, and again, the impact studies and the traffic management ordinance are, again, two of the big tools in trying to keep the number of access points as few as possible, spread out, aligned with others across the street, consolidated, closed in some cases, all those type of things. You can really do a lot with access management and access control. So there are lots of things that you can do short of adding another lane in each direction. Eventually, with some streets and roads, you're going to get to the point you just can't
have any more traffic.
Handle it. Mm-hmm. But that can be done in a lot of cases. And
one of the things that we did, we had one Walmart here in this town, and there were a number of folks opposed to having two Walmarts, saying that Aiken was not large enough for two Walmarts. And certainly with an additional Walmart in this town has reduced, I would think, the traffic flow on Whiskey Road and on the on Hitchcock or the bypass tremendously, with folks having access to the Walmart on the northwest side of town. The other thing that I wanted to mention was balancing economic growth. The south side of town is very attractive. A lot of businesses want to move there because they want to go where the high traffic flow is. And so certainly as it is incumbent upon us to look at other areas and investing in, if we're that serious about traffic flow, then we've got to look at investing and offering incentives for businesses to go to the east, farther north, or to the west of Aiken in order to create a greater balance in the growth in this town. That is one way of reducing it tremendously.
You're exactly right about there are some segments of Whiskey Road where the traffic volumes went down after the new Walmart went in on the west side. Just kind of expected that to happen, and lo and behold, it did. And you're exactly right about maybe there being some areas where you could do some development, and the impact in that region or that portion is not as great as it would be if the development occurred somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Again, that's back to planning, that's back to using the traffic management ordinance to your benefit, and it's back to using the information that you have, do the best job you can with the planning and spending the funds that you do have to make improvements. Mm-hmm. One thing I mentioned about doing more work for you, the city manager mentioned the amount of work we did last year. Every other year, of course, we do the level service study, and there's more work involved that year doing the data collection and that analysis. But if you look back over the past 7-8 years, I've spent about 20-25% of my time doing work for y'all. So I've got plenty of time available. I'll be more glad to come back and do other things and spend more time down here. I really enjoy coming down here working with you. So
I just want to say, Roger, you're highly respected in your field, and we just appreciate what you've done for us in terms of informing us. So thanks a lot.
Roger, I'd like to make a few comments. I think when we look at some of the numbers and we see the E's and F's, certainly we've got some concerns in a lot of those places. But I think the way I look at it, too, is there's certain times of day that we have that congestion. Mm-hmm. If somehow we could spread the congestion out all over the 24-hour period, perhaps we wouldn't have an E or F. But, of course, you can't do that because you've got certain peak times, restaurants and what have you. And I live really close to the Walgreens over there, and I've never had a problem going down, Richland into the Walmart area. There's several stores down there, a restaurant, what have you, that we go quite often. Now, at times, there is congestion. However, it's really funny because I just received a letter from DOT. You know that we had plans. We were hoping to widen University Parkway 3 lanes. We were hoping to widen the Richland itself so that we could bring 2 lanes to turn into University Parkway. And what they're telling us in this letter that I've got it at home on my desk now, just got it, is that it's not warranted. Mm-hmm. And it won't be until probably 2030. In one case, it's 20, I think, mm-hmm. 2020 and what have you. So, we're up against some of these things like that, and the money certainly is an object. Hitchcock Parkway, I go up and down Hitchcock Parkway probably on average of twice a day. And the only problem we were talking earlier, the only problem I've ever had on Hitchcock Parkway is when you get behind the school bus or 18-wheeler. Mm-hmm. Other times, I just go right on down.
Same here.
And I see the numbers, and I see what it comes out to be, but I sure don't run into that kind of thing when I'm driving. And maybe it's just the times that I'm driving. And I know it's hard to get out of Dibble. We've tried several times to get a light there, but I'm not so sure that's a smart thing to get a light there anyway. With you got that hill and 18-wheelers coming down there, and you could have jackknife and what have you. And that's probably why DOT hadn't agreed with it on several occasions in the past that we've tried. But that's sometimes a hold up getting out on the bypass there. I think the longest I've ever waited was 30 seconds. But I'm saying all that, and Daugherty, you mentioned Daugherty. Before we had DOT put in that right turn lane off of Silver Bluff, which has been a tremendous advantage. Many people have told me that. You know, we had one coming out of Daugherty, an extra lane put in so they could turn right. And so also, really, the right-hand lane enabled the center two lanes to turn left, because that was a real holdup on Daugherty. And that's improved it. But I'm saying all this just to say that I think we've got to be a little bit careful when we look at these numbers. And Leslie, you hit on it, I think, is at certain times it's going to be a little bit congested. Cracker Barrel's going to be congested up there at certain times, but it's not 24 hours a day. And people can pick their times also to go if they know that things are going to be a little bit congested. They can go at a different time a day if they can schedule that way. And that's what I think some folks don't do, that they probably could do. My wife seems like she's always wanting to get out on the road at 4:30 to do something. I said, golly, why don't you go another time of the day? But anyway... You've done a super job for us over the years, and I appreciate it, and I hope you will hang in with us some more. And I guess the bottom line of all of this is for us to analyze a little bit more with you, I'm just supposing now, and see what we can do. We talked earlier about the study. Let's see, which one was it? The Augusta Road from Aiken to Augusta Road, that's coming up too, as to what we can do, and that would affect Richland as well, going toward Augusta. Mm-hmm. So,
So this report's just kind of it's a tool, it's a starting
point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it points out some things that maybe could be looked at. You mentioned University Parkway. Don't know, City Manager, how much you would want me to comment on that, but.
Well, we do have Roger taking a look at that, Mayor, and of course, in your report, you've got the AADT showing
F.
It was an F, right? And it was the section that was between University and Richland, University Lane and Richland, showing the 14,000 AADT, and it is the F rating on that VC ratio. And when you look at the letter, Mayor, that we received from SCDOT, of course, they're finding in their study that it was C or better. So under SCDOT studies, they think if it's a C or better, that's fine. That's their ultimate goal. So that's what we're going to have to ask them to take another look.
So it was not a problem to DOT, but...
It's definitely a problem to us.
Right. It's a problem to us.
Well, and there has to be something wrong with that. I mean, one of you is looking at the data differently than the other. I mean, it's incomprehensible that an engineer would look, one engineer would say it's B, and another would say it's F. I mean, we're not engineers here on the council. We're just politicians trying to use this data to make a decision. And that was the reason I voted against Walgreens, was because traffic at that intersection. And SCDOT says it was a bad vote, and you were saying it was essentially a good vote.
Don't forget Mr. Ebner, Mr. Dwarf.
That's okay if you talk about it.
Well, there are several engineers up here.
Oh, right. Engineers. Right. Yeah,
we're not doing engineering work on this.
No, we're
that's
not.
That's your point.
Yeah, we have two engineers on staff on the council.
Three.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. But anyway, it's an interesting issue because we've got professional differences, and it's frustrating to us to try to use it.
That's why we have Roger involved, so he can take a look at the DOT data and just see where we came up with the difference. And that's a conversation we're going
to
have.
Mm-hmm. So our plan then is to go back to SCDOT after... The other thing is, you said that if we wanted levels A, B, and C throughout the city, there are certain things we could do. what are some of the things that we could do if we wanted a level A, B, or C throughout the city?
Well, in some cases, you can do turn lanes and access control and some things to help that happen. There may be some cases where you'd have to look at adding additional lanes to make it happen. I mean, most cases, you'd be looking at some sort of construction somewhere to make that occur. Back on University Parkway, we just on Thursday got the data sets from DOT, and they're looking at a very specific model that looks at traffic signal operations, and I just haven't had time yet to get into the nitty-gritty of it and see, you know, kind of where they're coming from on their analysis. But on the other hand, or just forgetting numbers and just driving and just looking, when you go from Richland Avenue going north past the hospital and past the university, the road changes four or five times.
Right.
It's four lane here, it's three lane there, it weaves in and out. And I think it really needs some study and some attention.
I'm not sure on that corridor where they set their traffic count up. Peak times, that traffic flow, if you're turning left or right from Richland Avenue on University Parkway, it's quite heavy early in the morning. But give it an hour, hour and a half, then it declines tremendously. So it depends on where that traffic count was set up, counting those cars as they turned right or left.
Well, I can tell you they only looked at the morning and the afternoon peak hour.
Okay.
And they were specifically looking at that left turn movement into the city to go north. They were really keyed in on that. Other times of day, you may have things going on. They didn't address other times of the day. They didn't address the issue of the total volume across the full day.
Hmm.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with what they did, but they didn't address some of the other things that we normally would take a look at. And we will. We've got the data and got the computer files and all that. We'll go through it and we'll have some discussions. I presume we'll have some discussions with DOT.
And Roger, I'm sorry, while I'm thinking about it, we do have money, as we were talking earlier, and the 1 cent sales tax to do some work on Hitchcock Parkway, mm-hmm. you know, with turn lanes mm-hmm. and whatever. And I think you said we're out for a consultant now to do some work on that. What's the plan? Not us, but
SCDOT is getting ready to advertise for consultants.
Ready to advertise? Okay.
I think they've advertised, but they haven't selected yet.
Right. Yeah.
They will need to look, I think, at all the possible alternatives when they do their mm-hmm. study report for that corridor. It's part of the environmental impact study requirements.
And they're looking at a potential public information session about a year from now.
Okay. All right. So you're going to be active with DOT? On the University Parkway, at least, right?
As much as the city would like for me to.
Okay, and then you'll be working with Ed on perhaps some of these other things as to what we can do and some of the other situations.
And any of the traffic signal issues, a couple of folks mentioned to me things they had seen with traffic signals here tonight. A couple of council members before
yeah.
the meeting.
Yeah.
Those type of things, timing. Do you need a left turn arrow or not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Waiting too long.
Right. Sort of. Okay. Okay. Are there other...
Just one other comment. Your report indicates that Daugherty Road between Whiskey and Silver Bluff is E, and I'm not sure when we have that road down for improvement. But that is clearly likely to get worse before it gets better, because once we open that passageway from Daugherty to Walmart, we're going to have a lot of cars that if they want to take that I wouldn't call it a shortcut, but that road that connects Daugherty to the Walmart area, if they're stopping to go left, all traffic on Daugherty is going to stop until they are able to make that turn. And that's going to have a significant impact. I don't think we have a left turn lane. And even if we did, it would have to be a major left turn lane. So the plans to do some work to alleviate the level of service issue on Daugherty are pretty significant at this point, probably among the most significant. I'm not sure whether it would be more important or less important than the Powderhouse Connector Road, but it's certainly up there, because we're going to hear it big time if people make a left turn through this shortcut, delay traffic too much. Do you understand what I was saying when I'm talking about with that connector road? I think we just went out to bid on.
We did.
Pawnee Nielsen, yeah.
Yeah, Pawnee Nielsen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I did get a memo from Larry Morrison. We do have a contractor identified, so now we're in the contract stage.
Yeah, but once that's done, what I said is we're going to have left turns from Daugherty onto that connector road, and if there's traffic coming the other way.
There's no assurance that Walmart is going to agree to a connector from that road to the back of Walmart.
Wow. We've spent all that money with no...
Well, that wasn't the main purpose of it, but we'd hope to have that, and maybe we still can, but I think the latest I'd heard was that they had not agreed to that.
Wow.
At least yet.
Well, I sure hope they do, because that's what we spent a lot of money on that. Okay, thank you.
Well, wasn't the main reason to put that road in.
Mr. Mayor, I think we need a little more definition with that intersection at University and Richland there. You know, we got red and green, and where the yellow. Where the yellow turns to blue is that red light where it goes back to three lanes. I think we need a little more definition there because I call that the suicide intersection there. When you come in there and turning onto Richland, you're looking straight at people coming across, and we just went through that at the Oak Lane and Whiskey, where we went ahead and added that fourth lane so we didn't have a suicide lane created there. So I think maybe if we narrow our scope of work, we could get maybe something done with that intersection, at least down past the red light. So
yeah, and perhaps that could be done with lights.
And so I'd like to be sure we get forward on that. I don't know if we need a memo from me or if the city manager can handle that.
Well, if you're going to be talking with DOT, which you said you were,
we are
worried on that, so that's certainly.
We are pursuing.
Okay, anything else?
Yes, sir. Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to say that, you know, I think this level of service on our roadways is just going to be consistently a work in progress. I think city staff and council over the past 8 to 10 years have made some great strides with interconnectivity between shopping centers, with closing curb cuts on Whiskey Road, with the Pawnee Nielsen connector, now with the the roadway that's going behind Walmart going down to Daugherty Road. I can imagine someone being on Daugherty Road and deciding to take that connector, but I can't imagine anyone turning into Daugherty Road with hopes of turning in the connector road from that standpoint. And then, as we all well know, that, you know, we've got one piece of property that's keeping us from going directly across Daugherty Road and tying into the back of Public Shopping Center, which then we would have connectivity all the way down to Target, pretty much from that standpoint. We're also working on the Powder House Connector Road directly across from Eastgate. And here again, you know, we're just in a catch-22. We want to ensure that we have right-of-way before that property develops. But we know just as soon as we put a road in there, then there's going to be development on that highway. You know, then the connector road that would come from the Eastgate Drive extension back to Centennial Parkway, which should ease traffic on Whiskey Road. I mean, there's great strides that's been made just in the past 6 or 8 years as far as reducing the level of service on Whiskey Road. I know it's not only Whiskey Road, but the Silver Bluff widening project that's coming up, and all the conversations that we've had with residents and trying to improve the traffic flow there and work with our residents and not just dump stuff in their backyards or take away their property completely. The City of Aiken's made great strides, and I think that you're going to continue to see city council and city staff working through these problems. But I don't foresee any time in the future where we're going to sit here and say we have a level of service C or less on every roadway in the City of Aiken. And I don't think that there's any other cities that could say that unless you're talking about a deserted country town. So it's something that we're consistently going to have to work on. It's something we have been working on, and I think we're going to continue to work with you on that. Certainly, if it gets to where we're paying you as much as it would cost for us to have a full-time traffic engineer. I would like to see someone with their time devoted to the city of Aiken and looking constantly at these projects and saying, okay, here's something we can do to alleviate some of the traffic on one of these high-level roads. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Roger, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to vote on this to accept it as information because it is something that we do every 2 years because it's in the traffic ordinance. So do we have a motion and a second to accept this as information?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion about that? If not, show of hands, please. Okay. Passes unanimously. Thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you, Roger.
Appreciate your work. Okay, under old business, next item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Ebner has recommended Tina McCarthy to our Accommodations Tax Committee. Her term would expire March 25th, 2013. Councilmember Homoki has recommended Alton Johnson to the Community Development Committee, and he's also recommended Mark Tatusco to the Recreation Commission. Mr. Johnson's term would expire September 2nd, 2012, and Mr. Tatusco would be September 1, 2012. And then also on the desk today, we had information sheet, commission nomination form from Royal J. Robbins, Jr.,
yeah,
Mayor.
That'll be my nomination and once we get through this.
Okay. That was for the Aviation Commission.
Okay. Okay, we've got these that we're ready to vote on. Do we
Mr.
have a
Mayor,
motion
move
second?
We approve the pending appointments of Tina McCarthy and Alton Johnson.
All right.
And then there was Mark Tatusco.
Mark Tatusco, sorry.
I'll second it. Okay. Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You just mentioned those two?
Those three
that we have on it.
Yes,
okay. All right. Any discussion on that? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Nominations for other positions that are empty? I've got one. Royal Robbins, better known as Zipper Robbins, for the General Aviation Committee. Bear Woodrum was my representative, and he has done a wonderful job over the years, but since he does no longer has his business in Aiken and he's not spending as much time, he felt it was time to retire. Each of you, you've got a copy of the nomination form. Okay, that'll be next meeting. Any other nominations? Okay. Very good. Item two, revised city business license renewal form. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. We had a work session last Monday that was well attended, and after extensive discussion that night, council recommended that we revise our business renewal practice and that we no longer pursue the policy of having folks that were renewing their business license providing a verification of their gross receipts through CPA letter or the page from the tax form, and instead go on an honor system. We have prepared, and you had in your packet, a revised renewal form for inside the city and outside the city. Unfortunately, what you received in the packet showed a third notice. That was just because we actually redid some sample forms so council would have something to go by. Certainly, folks would receive just an initial notice, and it would be marked as a first notice. But significantly, on the form, there is just a place to put the gross receipts and a certification. On the back of the form, it's explained, and on the front of the form, for businesses that are inside the city, to the extent that they pay a business license fee on the portion of their gross receipts that are earned in a city that has a business license tax, that they are entitled to a deduction for that. That's explained in detail on the back. And it came up at the meeting last Monday that this year, and your ordinance talks about the city business license fee being due on July 31st of every year. That's by ordinance. But this year, July 31st does fall on a Sunday, so as a policy, we will allow that tax to be paid until 5 p.m. on August 1st, since that's the first business day after July 31st, and that is explained on the reverse of the form. So for council's consideration is just the review of this revised business license renewal form that removes a requirement, and I just want to be very clear for the record, we will not require that anybody renewing their business license would have to provide income verification. We are, as we discussed last meeting, last week, under the ordinance, we would keep in effect the power for us identifying irregularities or anomalies in a filing for a business license tax, the authority to review that in an audit as necessary.
I have one question, Mr. Mayor. Okay. This year, you're giving them until August 1st to pay without penalty. Is there a way we can revisit our policy period and make it general such that it becomes due on the next business day versus giving a specific date? In other words, if something is due July 2nd and July 2nd is on the weekend and July 4th is on that next Monday, could we just say that the next available business day be the time when it's due?
You certainly can do that, Ms. Clyburn, and Mr. Smith may want to speak to that. Your current ordinance talks about the deadline being July 31st. Mm-hmm. If council felt it was appropriate, you could amend the ordinance in the event that the 31st fell on a Saturday or a Sunday or a legal holiday, federal legal holiday, that it would be due, you know, the next business day. As a practical matter, you don't necessarily need to amend the ordinance because as far as staff goes, we will allow a grace period to August 1st, and that's why it will be in the notice. So well, it's due, but it can be payable.
Well, we're saying that tonight, but we had testimony last week that wasn't always the case. So
that's why I wanted to be very clear tonight, Mr. DeWire, that we are doing that, and that is in the renewal notice on the back.
Can that apply to all monies due to the city, regardless of purpose, that if their due date falls on a non-business day or holiday, that it can be automatically due the next business day?
We could prepare an ordinance to that effect. The only caveat I would have to that is I want to make sure, and I would have to get with the finance department, there may be like a property tax bill that's due or something like that, where the date is specified when it has to be due, and we may not be able to change it. That may be a stretch, but I would want to do that review before I can give you absolute assurance we can do that.
And if that's the case, then I would want to include a provision that we won't assess a penalty.
Right.
You know, I just don't think it's fair if money is due at a Saturday or Sunday and somebody comes in, there's nobody here, and somebody comes in and pays it on a Monday that they pay a penalty. That's just not fair.
Right, and that's why I wanted to be sure to put that on the record tonight, and also it is on the renewal form that folks will have till 5 o'clock on August 1st to pay their business license fee. Right.
And I would make one other point. I initially expressed concern with these contracted decals because I'd never heard of them until we got into this issue. And I guess they're only required for subcontractors.
If it would be helpful, about 11 or 12 years ago, we were, of course, sending out our business license inspectors. They were going on the job, having to interview folks, find out who the contractor was, who the subcontractors would be. So we worked in collaboration. I think one of the citizens who attended last week talked about that.
Yeah, Jerry Tindall, yeah.
Right. And, he is here tonight. And we tried to come up with a way to easily identify, you know, who was on the job and make sure that the folks that are working there, all the businesses represented on that job site had a business license. So a general contractor would get a decal. Now, typically a general contractor would get the decal for the general contractor vehicles. So, for example, if it's Richard Pierce General Contractor and I have a painter that I pay, that painter would not necessarily have to have a decal. Now, because the painter works for me. Now, if I'm Richard Pierce, general contractor, and I have Ace Painting, and they show up in the Ace Painting van, they would have to have a decal because that's a separate business. And the decal, I think the charge for the decal is $5, and that's just for convenience so we can ride by. You see this business, this business, this business, decal, decal, decal. You know that's good. You can press on. Of course, to the extent that we see vehicles that don't have decals, that's when our inspector will stop and make inquiry. So a general contractor is not required to, but a general contractor certainly could buy decals for all the folks that work for them to prevent any inconvenience of having to answer questions about who is my employee, who is my subcontractor. So the best way that I've worked through this is to think about how many businesses are there at the particular work site, and each of those businesses must have a decal. And I don't think we've changed that rate in the 12 years we've had the decal program.
Mr. Mayor, I wondered if our city manager would address Kim's memo regarding the IT and that we're not set up to do some of the things that's been asked regarding electronically paying.
Again, the matter of being able to pay for the business license fees online is that you run into an issue of cost. Since we have a credit card company that we work with a bank, we just have some issues to work through because some of the business license fees, as you can imagine, are fairly significant. And as far as what we would be able to do, as far as taking payment online, may involve some cost that would be in addition to the fee, and we just need some time to work that through. As it exists right now, of course, you can register online for parks and recreation programs. Those fees for those programs were such that, you know, we could cover that cost in the fees that we levied. With the business license fees, a little bit different creature because someone may pay $60 and someone may pay $6,000. So we just need to figure out a fair and equitable way to allow that payment.
Okay. Is anyone in the audience that would like to speak? You certainly may do so.
John Wade. I think I needed a couple of clarifications. I think Richard answered a couple of them. On the two forms on the front of the third and the first notice, will all wording be the same for in-business, in-city businesses, and out-of-city business, whether it's first, second, or third notice?
The
wording.
Now, of course, if it's a second notice, it'll indicate that.
Right.
If it gets to a third notice, we talk about it being seriously delinquent. The now, did you say is there a difference in the wording between an in-city business and out-of-city business?
And that's correct.
There is a difference because, again, an in-city business that would go to another jurisdiction, I think we talked about North Augusta last Monday,
right,
and pay a business license fee, you know, they have a deduction because they pay in a fee on the gross receipts that were earned in North Augusta. An out-of-city business would only pay a business license fee on the gross receipts earned inside the city limits of Aiken.
But shouldn't that be addressed on the back of the page? Because I had a question on that, and I also had the same one Ms. Clyburn had on the next business day instead of putting a date down there. But in the second paragraph, the business license fee is based on a gross income and total revenue. Shouldn't that be addressed in that section in there somewhere for in-city businesses and out-of-city businesses? I'm missing it.
It is right down where it talks about the deductions on the back of the page, section 12-36, and it defines the deductions there. So it's on the front and the back.
That's where I'm on the back page, but I didn't see it back there, so that's...
Make sure you're looking at the in-city application. There's two different applications in there.
Okay, I'm on the very last page, so is there something different?
It actually is on that form as well. Right here. It shows deductions.
Right. But I'm not seeing where that states if you're out of city. I'm seeing where it's got the deductions. If you're in the city and you're paying another government entity or so-and-so, that you get to make that deductions. But if you're actually a business that's operating out of the city limits.
Right, you wouldn't get a deduction because you only pay the business license.
You would also, from the paragraph above that, you wouldn't have to show gross income.
Right, and that's on the front of the form.
An out-of-city business only has to report the gross receipts earned within the city of Aiken, so they would not be allowed to take any deductions.
Right. Right, I understand that. I'm just trying to understand where it is on these forms.
It's on the front.
It's on the front. On the out-of-city.
Right on the front.
Okay, the one that says on the third notice. No, that's in the city.
No, it's the... There's two forms, and it's okay. The second form. It's on the front, right here on the right.
Okay, I see it. Right. All right, thank you. I had one more. On the bottom highlighted part of below the section 1240, in your business no longer operating in the city, and in the second sentence, you must notify in writing and pay all fees due to close the business license account. Those fees due are the only ones that are due for that year, and no additional fees to close the account, or is there some additional fees to close the account?
To me, it would just be the fees owed for that year, but now, yeah, it's just the fees that are owed for that year, right.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak?
Okay. Can I ask a question with regard to the audit, at least for clarification while Debbie's coming up? I would assume that if we have reason to go to a business to verify numbers because of a question or what have you, when we say audit, I hope we liberally define that term, and in some cases it may be nothing more than walking in, and if the owner wanted to say, here's my tax form and it shows you that I'm right, that would be okay. If the business owner wanted to say, here's my monthly reports, that would be all right, as opposed to the typical definition of an audit where we want to look at every piece of paper and so forth. I mean, I assume the staff would have the flexibility to decide what they need to do to verify the gross income.
And I think you make a good point, Mr. DeWar. Certainly to the extent that there's an irregularity or an anomaly, that's the only reason we would make contact anyway. And to the extent that we can get it very simply resolved, that's obviously in everyone's best interest,
sure.
And that's
okay.
The approach we would take.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Debbie Nix. I reside at 808 Woodward Street. I'm a small business owner. My husband, Harry, of 35 years, and I own Southern Plumbing and Electrical, Heating and Air. And I own Butterbean Properties, which is a vacation rental company that I dearly love. And I'm also a realtor with Aiken Properties. I have no political aspirations. I only am compelled to do this for the people. Mr. Mayor, we spent over 8 months talking about the need to change gross receipts verification policy. You voiced your concern that you'd not heard from other business owners. So a workshop was called to get input from the businesses. The city did not inform the businesses of this meeting. I don't know if you realize that or not. City Manager Richard Pierce admitted that he only sent out 13 letters to inform the businesses that I'm aware of. There was no mention of this meeting in the newsletter issued in our monthly water bill. There was no ad in the newspaper that I'm aware of. So I took my money and I notified 1,400 businesses. How would they have heard if we had not done that? To us, this is an indicator of the attitude of our city manager towards small businesses in Aiken. The cost of those 1,400 letters being mailed was almost $1,000. I'm respectfully requesting that I be reimbursed for this money, plus the $170 that I was charged, $90 for addresses so I could mail notice to small businesses by the city of Aiken, and business license copies that our city manager charged me. I did request a breakdown on these charges, but have yet to receive one. We also made hundreds of robocalls as well as emails, which cost money as well. Mr. Mayor, we trusted you to keep your word on the intent of the meeting. The Thursday before the meeting, we were sent the agenda. It was plain that someone's intention was to intimidate the small businesses by bringing in staff and attorneys of the Municipal Association and by placing the businesses at the very end of the agenda. We were of the understanding that the entire time that we all agreed the purpose of the meeting was to hear from small business. We should have been at the beginning of the meeting. We appealed to you to allow the businesses to speak first. Your concern was whether the Municipal Association and Mr. Crow had time to wait. Where was the concern for the small businesses' ability to wait? When asked to make a motion for a vote to allow the small businesses to speak, not one of you made a motion. After the small businesses showed their disapproval, Mr. Mayor, you capitulated and allowed the small businesses to speak. Thank you. It took from 6:30 until 11 o'clock before this discussion ended. It was very clear and evident that this was not one on merit, nor the amount of businesses that called, emailed, or showed up for the meeting. It was not even one on you realizing how egregious the treatment doled out by the city manager and his staff towards the small business was. The change only came when our attorney stood and informed you that you were perilously close to a class action lawsuit. I see no change in your attitude towards small business, just fear of litigation, which is a very real fear. So here we are again. You want to give us a policy change. Why has Mr. Pierce repeatedly throughout our discussion said that this would take an ordinance change, yet when it was clear that the rules would change to benefit the small businesses, it suddenly became possible to do this with just a policy change? I believe had the city finance department not been stopped, there would have been an ordinance change to solidify this egregious treatment of small businesses. A policy change can occur at a whim. It is an in-house deal. In essence, it can be changed without input from the people. In fact, next year or next month, if you decide to revert back to the oppressive policy that you are advocating, it will put the small businesses right back where we are now. We want an ordinance change. So if you decide to make a change back to revert, we have input. Again, treating it as a policy makes it subject to change for any reason at any time. Mr. Mayor, you've constantly complimented your staff, even to the point that you said that you did not want them to take the blame for this taking so long. Yet what did you do to plan about, what do you plan to do about their willingness to win this battle at all costs, even to the point of leaving the city council and the city of Aiken open to a legitimate and serious class action lawsuit? Mr. Crow's statement to city council and the small business community present mentioned that one of his favorite quotes was from Ronald Reagan, whom he felt certain that many of the businesses loved and appreciated. That quote was, "Trust but verify." Ronald Reagan did indeed make that statement. But at the time, he was standing next to a Marxist communist, Mikhail Gorbachev. This has been what we have experienced with the adversarial relationship between the city manager, finance department, and the small business community. And so I ask you, Mr. Mayor, and members of city council, please tear down this wall and give us a statute, an ordinance that prevents the usurpation of power by a small handful of bureaucrats who have been entrusted by city council, who in turn have been entrusted by us, the taxpayers of the city of Aiken, that cannot betray us and which cannot be jerked out from under us in the dark of night. The Aiken Small Business Roundtable and all the businesses in Aiken deserve a public apology posted in the Aiken Standard from City Council, City Manager, and staff, as well as a statement of intent that you are here to serve all the people of Aiken and continue striving to make Aiken, South Carolina, a true small business-friendly city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Debbie.
Mayor, I just feel compelled to put in the record just to clear up any misunderstanding. Last Monday night's work session was advertised in the Aiken Standard. We did post it on the city website. We posted it to Facebook and Twitter. That's always been available to the public to sign up if they want to have notices of, you know, the different meetings or events that the city is going to have. And again, there's no attempt not to give notice, but then again, I need to have you know, on my files, who would like notices of the various meetings. I did send out an email to the folks who did sign up at the business forum, who said that when business issues came before them, that they would like to be notified. And in fact, we had a sign-up sheet last week, last Monday, and I think I got two additional email addresses last week, and I made sure for the packet of information that we handed out tonight that those two additional people had it as well. So again, the notice we gave of the special meeting would be the notice that we gave any council meeting.
Mr. Pierce, where did you post this in the Aiken Standard?
That would have been in the legal notices section. Our city clerk does that with all council meetings, and it has the ordinances listed there. So we did what we always do.
Okay, so this was in the classified section?
Legal notices section.
We would never have thought to look there. Would never have thought to look on the website. Best way to get in touch with a business owner is either by the phone or by mail. I don't know how any of us would have found that notification.
Well, and you'll remember, Ms. Nix, when we had the meeting last November with Councilmember Wells, Councilmember Ebner, that we encouraged you to provide us with that information, and that we'd be certainly happy to send out notices of anything that we felt affected small business. And as I recall, we had an item, and I can't remember the specific item, but it related to small business, and I did send it out to the folks who signed up last summer as wanting to receive notices of small business items. And as I recall, I think both you and Dee Dee did compliment the fact that we were trying to get in contact with you. Again, we do these meetings in public. If there are folks that are specifically interested in issues, we have no problem with, you know, giving a copy of the packet, the link to the website. That's why we put everything there. So it's what we do in the normal course for any city council meeting.
You sent letters out when we had the workshop before.
We sent out 2,000 letters and had approximately 30 to 35 people
attend.
Right. And that's why at the event, with those folks being the most interested in small business issues, we provided an opportunity for folks to share their email address with us, so that as we did follow up, and for instance, when we put the online survey on, we sent emails out. There was extensive coverage in the newspaper about that, and we had no additional folks sign up. So again, we don't mind providing notice. We just do it with the best means that we have available to us.
Where was the extensive coverage?
In the newspaper, they covered the forum that we had downstairs.
Oh, you're talking about the forum.
And they actually put it in the events calendar, and it was talked about, you know, come to City Hall and talk about small business items. And
well,
again, Ms. Nix, you know, we met in November. I heard absolutely nothing from you until Horizons on January 29. And again, you felt very compelled to present your side of the story. My side of the story is there's no intent to betray anyone. We certainly want to treat people fairly, and we certainly want folks to know about council meetings we're having and provide them the opportunity to speak. But again, I worked with the list I had. If there were additional people, I'd have been glad to provide notice to them as well, but just was not made aware of that.
I worked with the list that you charged me $90 for, that you charged me $40 for in July. And out of that list, I actually have a stack, which I intend to give you, of addresses that no longer exist, because you would be mailing to people that don't exist, and about 50 emails that are no longer any good, because we did that. However, I think that it is unfair to think that anyone would think to look in the legal section of the classified ads or to go just look every day on the website to see what's going on. The best way to have done this, to really have made certain that the small businesses didn't feel that they weren't notified, would be to have sent out a letter. Let me
weigh in, Debbie. I want to point out that I sent a special email out on the meeting.
Yeah.
For my list, which is well over 300 people, and I highlighted the fact that if you're a business owner, it's important to be here. I think Councilmember forwarded to his list, so we did make I think a good faith effort to get the word out. Mm-hmm. I did agree, and I would like council to seriously consider reimbursing Mrs. Nix for the business license data that we have. I think you said it was, what, $90?
It was $90.
Yeah. I think her purpose was noble. I think we all know what her reason was. It wasn't any personal gain. It was simply to make sure that she got as many businesses identified and advised at the meeting as possible. So I would certainly appreciate council's support to reimburse her for that $90.
And I would like for Kim Abney to have an opportunity to explain why we charge what we charge. We certainly get, you know, many requests for freedom of information. We get them from commercial concerns and concerned citizens. Sure. as Ms. Nix. There's no intent to make it burdensome. We're merely trying to recoup the cost of compiling the information and then putting it in the form that Ms. Nix asked, which was an Excel spreadsheet, not what we normally keep the data in. Ms. Abney can speak, though, more accurately as to the time involved. There's no profit from this. We just get a lot of these requests, and we need to be sure that we're covering the cost of that data retrieval.
Well, and I would hope that under similar circumstances for other people, we would do the same thing and consider reimbursing them if they're acting in the public interest and not for any personal interest. In other words, a business that wants it to find out advertisers, they should pay. But somebody who's doing it, as Mrs. Nix is, for public purpose, I think I would support reimbursing.
If I may, Mr. Dewar, state law allows you to do that if you find that the request is in the public interest.
Yes.
The concern you would have is how many of these requests would you then get, knowing that council has developed this new policy about reimbursing those special requests, which may or may not be in everybody's public interest, and then you have to deal with that.
Sure, and I would expect we'd be judicious. I mean, this is the first time since I've been on council that we've discussed doing this, and I wouldn't want to make it a regular thing, but again, it's in the public interest, clearly, and in this case.
And just by way of information, we've never reimbursed anyone who's made a Freedom of Information request.
I will tell you this, the business owners were furious that, number one, I was charged for the addresses, and number two, that I had to pull it out of my pocket to pay to inform them. And I think that that's wrong, and I don't know how any of you could think that that's a right. If you choose for me to pull $1,000 out of my savings account and pay this bill, then that's what I will have to do. But I believe that it was your responsibility to notify if you really wanted, your intent was for people to come, other than the classified. Do you guys really want that? I mean, other than the classified and on the website and 13 emails.
It was actually in the paper, though. We sent it out to the media, and it was in the newspaper that we were having the meeting. So it was published.
What is the request for payment? Is it $1,000? Is it $90? Is it $1,090? What is the request?
No, my thought was the $90.
$1,090. That's what the cost. I have the bill. That's not correct. The bill for the printing was $948.82, and then there's $90 on top of that. I have a copy of the bill for the printing.
What did you do? Print copies of the entire packet?
They printed a brochure.
No, that was the printing for the. It was a one piece of paper that was tri-folded, and the printer had to print it, trifold it, and mail it for us.
And what did it say?
Oh, I have one here.
I'd just like to see.
I'd like to see what was supposed to be.
I'll look at it in the past.
I'll look at that, please.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I've already got one.
Can I open it up?
Since you have extra numbers.
Thank you. Ms. Abney did not have a chance to speak last Monday. Could I just have her come to the microphone, Mayor, to talk about the basis for the charge?
I don't know whether you were finished for the time being or not.
Just one more question. Do you have a formal written policy on Freedom of Information Act that the City Council has voted on?
It's a state law. We follow state.
I understand that. But I was told by my consultant that the City Council actually needed to verify how their charges would be calculated, and I need to know if you have such a policy, because all we're told is it costs $40, $90, $80, but we're not, there's no breakdown. If I work for you, then I'm going to give you a breakdown on what I charge you for. I think it would be to your advantage to have a policy.
We strictly charge for staff time, and that's what was calculated. That Ms. Abney is right behind you, and she can speak to the $90.
Okay. But as current, the City Council has no policy on the Freedom of Information.
We just work in consultation with our city attorney, who has advised that under the state statute, we can charge the reasonable charges for producing the requested document in the form that you requested.
Okay. Thank you.
Kim, could you let us know how we calculate the $90, please?
Exactly what you said. It's the staff time, and when we have to respond to a Freedom of Information, we read what they're asking for and then provide exactly what they're asking for.
And again, if you're asked for the addresses, you provided the addresses you had on file.
Yes. If we're asked for the location of the business, we provide the street address of the business. If we're asked for the mailing address, we provide the mailing address. We can only provide the information that we have in our AS400, which is our computer, which houses all of the data for our, whether it be business license, taxpayers, water customers. But many, many times people will move their business or close their business or only be here for a short period of time. And of course, when we send out the renewal, if we get those back, and presumably we'll get some back in May when we mail them out, then that's part of our job, is to decide, figure out, track them down. Did these people close their business? Were they just a one-time only business? And we make our corrections at that time, but we do only mail once a year.
And then the format that you put it in, is that what you keep the addresses in?
No. Our addresses are in the AS400. So when a Freedom of Information is asking for information out of the AS400, we have to write what's called a query, which is what it sounds like. We inquire of the information. That has to be programmed, and only certain people can do that to get the information out of the AS400. If it's something new and different that we haven't done before, then that takes time. It could take from 30 minutes to 2 hours, depending on what type of information, or could take longer if you're asking for a lot of different components of information. For this one, when we pulled in the addresses, some of the zip codes were not matched up right, so we had to go back and manually match up the zip codes. And why that usually happens is that somebody's using a P.O. box, Aiken 29802-1234, the zip code file doesn't carry over that's Aiken, but you have to go and look at it, say 29802, and put the word Aiken in the Excel file. If we were mailing it out of our AS400, it knows that. But when you bring it into the query, computers are only as smart as the people who program them. So if I say, bring me in the zip code, it's going to bring me the zip code, but it's not smart enough to say, that's Aiken.
Right.
But I did clean those up before we provided them, because she's asked for zip code. Well, a zip code without a city and state isn't going to do anybody any good.
And initially the request was for the location of businesses, is that correct?
Yes.
And then we received a follow-up inquiry that we needed the mailing addresses. And just for council's edification, we did not charge anything for providing mailing addresses in addition to the location. So we really did not charge for providing the mailing addresses. We charged for that initial inquiry of what we were asked for, to provide the location of all the business license holders.
And if we print a long report, sometimes people will ask us for a long report, we do charge 25 cents per page.
$0.25 per page.
In addition to staff time to create it. Now, there was no page charges since this was electronic, and that was the way that she'd requested it.
And in our discussions, I recall, too, that there are entities that ask for regular reports of the new businesses that may sign up in a month.
Yes, sir.
And that's a $25 charge.
$25, even though we run the same one time after time. That's a $25 charge that we use for that. We had to develop that, and each time it might only take 10-15 minutes to recreate it, but we do have that charge that we add every time.
So did I understand you to say that when you get this new business every month, is that a template that you can create so you don't have to do the whole thing, start from scratch every month?
Yes, if it's... there's a couple of businesses that ask for new businesses.
Sure.
And so that exists out there. That query has been created. And to rerun that, we charge.
And that's an appropriate function for us to charge. If I just asked you to send me a list of businesses in the city, could I ask that? Was that a fair question, a fair request to make? Or do I need to be specific in what I want about that business?
If you're not specific, I don't know what to provide to you under your Freedom of Information.
Okay, I'm going to the business license division, and I'm asking for a list of businesses.
You just want their names? I mean, if that's all you ask is their names, then that's what we're going to provide to you. If you ask for their names and location, I'm going to provide you their names and their street location.
Okay, so we've got to pull teeth. So that's why Mrs. Nix had to get so particular, so specific, to get the data out. I mean, I would think that if I just asked you for a list of businesses that you'd give them to me, and it would have the name, and it would have the address, and it would have the phone number, that kind of thing.
We keep our business information, just like we do our tax information, our utility billing information, in a mainframe computer.
Okay.
It's called an iSeries. It's an IBM computer.
Okay.
And we use a program called SunGuard HD, which is a public government software program.
Okay.
That's how we do all of our work. That's how we bill. That's how we collect.
So we have not created templates, then, is what you're saying.
No. If you ask for the business name, address, email address, phone number, we have that now. But we didn't have that. We had to create that because she didn't ask for the name, mailing address, city, zip code. She asked for their location.
Was there any added complexity to put it into an Excel format?
Yes, sir.
Otherwise, what format would it have been in?
Green bar paper. I mean, that's the way it comes out of the query. It's going to print out on a...
And I'm not a computer person, but if you gave me that report in that format, is it easily convertible to Excel?
Not if I... If I print you a piece of paper, you can't convert
it. No,
that.
I mean, if when you print a report, you're coming up with a computer file.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what I'm saying is if you send me that file in that format, is that something that I could convert to Excel? Or is it better that you do it in Excel?
We send file information like that back and forth to our auditors, and they have programs on their side that they can do that. Could you? I don't know if you have that program to be able to do that. So if you want an Excel file, it's best to specify that you want an Excel file because you might get something that you can't use. If I send you a PDF, mm-hmm. which is basically like a picture document,
right.
then you may or may not be able to use that for your purposes.
Okay. Thank you.
This is not tit for tat, but I just have a question. What am I being charged by the hour for your staff?
That is time that was spent on this inquiry.
But what amount am I being charged by the hour?
Well, we let Ms. Abdi sit down. She would have to tell you that.
Okay.
Deputy LaLaw, and I've seen it in other states and other places I've been to, the law specifically at every level of government allows the originating agency to cut the cost of getting the data together and giving it to you.
Right.
And it's a slam dunk. And it might cost Kim $90. You might go to North Augusta. It could be $70. You could go to Greenville. It could be $110. But, each staff is going to compute their cost. I mean, the wages are different. The time is different. The equipment's different.
True, but as a consumer, I deserve to know the amount per hour and how many hours that were charged. And I'd like to make this statement because this is a...
Wait a minute. Well, let me just get involved in that.
Kim perhaps can tell you, right?
Yes. Keep in mind, you got different employees at different wages, so...
I understand that.
I mean, we're going to accept what Mrs. Abney says is... I mean, I will accept whatever she says.
I understand that. I would just like to know. But I'd also like to state this is a huge, this is just a great display of the difference between a small business. I have thousands of customers on my database, but in a second, in a minute, I can take those customers, put them in Excel, and actually put them in a Word document and do anything that I want to do with a QuickBook software. So it's not time consuming for me. I can't imagine it taken, which I guess because you have such a convoluted computer system, maybe that's the difference. But with small business, it's just zip, 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 and we have it. So.
Well, I don't mean to be flip, but we wouldn't use Quicken for a $40 million operation.
But you have to consider it for this.
When we have to create the query, somebody has to go in and create that, and it could take a short period of time if it's something very much like we've done before. Many times with a Freedom of Information, we have to actually do the work before we can tell you how long and how much it's going to take. And we've been burned before, not in my department, but on somebody who wanted a lot of information. And we said, well, we think that'll be, I don't remember the exact, I'm just going to make this up, $250. But then when it came down to it, and we did the work, and a lot of this was computer work, what was it? Over twice what our initial request, you know, what we thought it was going to be. But we're locked into that. And so the people paid us $250, but it took city staff many, many, many more hours than that to actually get the information that they wanted. So many times, and this time, you go in and you create the query. Somebody has to review the query because we don't let something just go out without a review process. And then it has to be brought in. And like I said, no, not everybody has the little piece that's called the data transfer that can bring it in from the AS400 into an Excel file. Once you bring it into your Excel file, you have to look at it. Because like I said, that's when I noticed I've got these zip codes, but I don't have any city and state. And that's no good. So I went in and made sure I corrected all.
How did we calculate the $90 for Ms. Nix's inquiry?
It was based on the time to develop and review and create the spreadsheet for that query, and it's staff time, and it included some of Lex Kirkland's time, some of Al Cawthorn's time, and some of my time. And I do not remember exactly how many pieces of each. I mean, we've got it, but I don't remember. It was about 45 minutes to create the query. I do remember that part.
But now that you've done that, if somebody else comes up, they wouldn't have to pay for that report generation time. You've got the template done.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, saying that, I don't think we'd give it away. I mean, I think we would have a standard cost that we would discuss with city manager. I mean, I don't think...
Well, you have the record as of that date you could provide.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But that's like the $25 that we charge for the people who want it every month.
Because of other...
That record will change next year when all the new addresses come in.
That's exactly right.
I have a legal question to our attorney. What, in reference to precedent, where are we with precedent in terms of establishing this, and what are we required to do based on what we, what Ms. Nix has occurred here?
We could spend a lot of time talking about the Freedom of Information Act.
Mm-hmm.
You're obligated as a public body to provide a document that you have in your possession to any member of the public who requests it. And you are allowed to charge appropriately in accordance with the statute for the production of that document. Chief Fromer is required to post a copy of every police report that he issues every day. He's required to keep those police reports in a notebook, and he is required to have that notebook in a place where anybody that wants to walk into public safety can go and glance through those. If they want a copy, he has the ability to charge them a per page charge for those copies. That's a specific state law that mandates that he does that. Okay. If you have a document in the city that says these are our business owners and these are their addresses, you would be obligated to present that, and you would be it wouldn't be a $90 charge for the preparation of that document. Okay, so there is differences in how that document is presented, how it's prepared, whether or not you actually have it on hand. Is that answering your question?
The contention here is that, and correct me if I'm incorrect, I thought I heard Debbie say that she helped to advertise the meeting. In her effort to advertise, does that something does that have to do with our asking her to do it? Can she do it on her own if she doesn't think the word is getting out, and she wants sufficient people to know about the meeting? How sensitive is that area, and as how does it apply to other folks who may not feel that proper advertising is being made, and how does what does this do to us in the future?
Well, I think one of the things you were wrestling with, or that your city manager was wrestling with, is you hear him talk about we sent out 2,000 notices last summer and 30 people showed
okay.
up.
All right.
So you know, one of the things council has to evaluate is it cost effective to send that many notices out personally on an item that number of people was involved in? Is that in the public interest? Okay, and that, I don't have the answer to that question. That's a policy decision for city council.
Okay.
My recollection is you were asked at one of the work sessions not to send out a notice, that she wanted to send the notice out. And she did not want you to send that notice out. I seem to recall that at some point during the discussions, that she wanted to be able to send the notice out, and she wasn't going to rely on city council to do that.
And what we, as far as trying to contain costs, when we've had some broad sweeping freedom of information requests that come in, we've made the documents available for inspection so that we didn't charge 25 cents a page for hundreds and hundreds of pages. The documents are public. We make them available. In this particular case, the request was for a specific format for the documents to aid her purpose, and that's why we incurred that additional staff.
Hey, Dee Dee Vauders, 1022 South Boundary Avenue. One thing, just in the interest of transparency, this is just a suggestion. Perhaps you want to establish whatever that hourly rate is. I think that's what Debbie was trying to get down. I mean, I can't speak for Debbie, but that's just a suggestion, not why I came to the microphone. But maybe you want to say it's whatever your hourly rate per man hour you're going to charge.
And typically that's what we do based on the staff that would be involved in responding to the request, and that's why we give the price.
I would think, here again, it's all according to who's going to be involved in accessing that information. And if it's going to take a computer programmer to sit there and figure out how to dig that information, specific information out, then that's going to be charged at a different rate than if it's taking a clerk and doing something here.
Right.
I think according to the person's position in the city and what the city is currently paying them is going to determine the rate. So I don't think you could say this is going to be $25 an hour and cover.
Could you let them know up front? You know what their request is up front,
here,
right?
Here again,
we let them know the price up front before we produce the document.
Well, okay. I think we get into some situations, just as Kim said, you know, to where we think it may take $250 to cover it, and it's taken $500 to do it.
Right. Then a communication back that this is going to be, it looks like it's going to take, just a communication. That's not why I came to the mic, though. But anyway, I actually came to the mic to say I think we made great strides last week, okay? I really do. It took us a long time to get there, but I think we made some pretty good strides. However, the one thing I would like to ask is that we do look at putting this, or you look at putting this in the form of an ordinance. Okay, so that has to have a first reading and a second reading, so plenty of public notification before a change is made. So everything that City Manager Pierce has put forth, I'd like to see that in an ordinance so it can't just be a policy change at the whim. If for some reason you guys don't decide to run next time or whatever, that this doesn't, you've all agreed to this, but where's the protection for the businesses without an ordinance? And I really would like to see you consider that.
I don't see a problem with that. Is any
problem you see?
Nope. The sense I saw last week was council wanted to get this done quickly.
And that was the effort. But right.
Well,
with protection.
But the ordinance can be amended any time in the future.
With a first and second reading and public notice, which is way different than policy change, which can happen internally, and you guys may or may not even be. But you may or may not be even be aware. A lot of you aren't aware that, like, what came up about if the 31st is on a Saturday. A lot of you aren't aware that come that Monday taxes were late. So, if we have this in an ordinance form, it is made public record, first and second reading, before it's changed. And I would really like to see your proposal, not just as a policy, which I like the vast majority of the proposal, but I would like to see that really as an ordinance.
My only comment would be is we're getting close to that point in time when staff has got to send out business licenses, so I would ask, can we, the city attorney, can we do this by resolution tonight to get it going and then come back the next two council meetings and formalize it in an ordinance?
I mean, the only reason I brought it up is, in my opinion, the ordinance is flexible enough to allow you to require the presentation of an income tax return or not. And so, in my opinion, you did not have to modify the ordinance by letting Mr. Pierce know if council, a majority of council votes in favor of that. If you let Mr. Pierce know tonight that that's what you want council's present policy to be, that's what the policy will be, and we can go ahead and start drafting an ordinance.
Well, and I can say this, if that's what the sense of council is, that what's the policy needs to be, we're not changing the policy until council votes to change the policy.
Well, the policy right now does not require tax forms to be presented by anybody.
Okay.
The policy simply says, the law says it can be.
That's right.
And within the city, I guess, I don't know how many years ago, it became policy that we want to see the tax forms if you're in the city.
2002.
But that's not specifically required in the ordinance. The only thing the ordinance says, maybe it should have been, but it isn't. The only thing the ordinance says is you can do it if you want to. And it's modeled after the model business license that's in the business license handbook that the Municipal Association puts out. But it's not to say
that we modify it to say that you may not require?
We could. I guess we could.
That would be a change in the order. You know what I'm after. I want some protection that it has to be made public with a vote by the city council to change the policy.
Now D.D.,
that's
what D.D., if I may, please.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want folks sitting out here in the audience to misunderstand this. Even when city council changes a policy, it has to be placed on the agenda. Just as this was. It has to be advertised in the newspaper,
okay.
Just as this was, that it was coming up tonight. Okay? Now,
first
I do understand that with an ordinance you have first and second reading, where a policy change, it is advertised in the paper, it is on the agenda. It's not something that council can just decide to do and do it overnight. We cannot do that. It has to be in a public meeting. It has to be advertised. And then we can make a policy change. So it's not something we can
okay.
do.
So I'll stand corrected and still say I want the ordinance with the first and second reading and the highest level of protection for the businesses represented.
And that shouldn't be a problem.
Are you saying that, Dee, let me ask a question.
Yeah.
Are you saying that you'd rather us not vote on this now, but to work on an ordinance and then bring it back to you? I would like to see us vote on this now, get it done, and then work on the ordinance, and then we'll vote on that. Make it into an ordinance.
And if you promise that we'll have an ordinance.
Let me just say, Didi, I don't know what the implication is here, but this body wants to do what's right, number one.
Right.
And I stand firmly on that. Secondly, we're trying to protect the citizens of this community. I stand firmly on that.
Right.
My recommendation, Mayor, and I'm tired of this speculation here, my recommendation is that we approve this form as is tonight, schedule the first reading the next meeting, and the second reading of that 2 weeks from that, so that we can stop giving out by the citizens that there's something to be feared by the city of Aiken and the reverse as well. We trust you. And we're trusting you enough to go this route as business owners in terms of asking you on your trust to give us the correct information. Now we're going to, as a body, approve this on tonight with, so that you can have that protection, but make it official the first reading at our next scheduled meeting, the second reading 2 weeks following that.
I would appreciate that.
I think we need
that.
To move on from this.
Yeah, and like I said, I would appreciate that. I, too, want to move on. I'm just always fearful about what this body approves. May not always be this body. Okay.
I think things
change. I'm not saying that I want someone to run again. I'm just saying I'm going to be here practicing, you know, I'm going to be here with my business for 30 years, and I don't think all of you are going to be on city council that long.
Listen, I'm one that the fear of someone running or opposing me does not impact my decision. So I think the rest of us are here. We're here to serve.
Well, hopefully that's not what it came across as. I just want protection moving forward. We all change. We're all going to move on from this. And whatever businesses come after us and whatever city council folks come after us and whatever goes beyond us, we need protection, that there's some levels that have to be overcome to make any changes. So I like what you said about approving it tonight, but moving forward, I was getting ready to call you, Leslie. I'll call you Councilman Price. Moving forward with an ordinance that will require first and second reading to make any changes. And I think that may work towards really rebuilding some of this lost trust that perhaps we have for each other. And that's my suggestion. Thanks.
Thank you.
Very good. May I, before Ms. Falders leaves,
is there a second to Ms. Price's motion?
Oh, I'll second it.
Did she make a motion?
Yes.
I heard that as a motion. I heard that as a very forceful motion.
I'll second that motion.
Yeah.
Any discussion? Any more discussion?
Please restate the motion. Now, we've talked about several things for the last 20 minutes that are the same.
And I'll ask Councilmember Price to correct me if I get this wrong, but she was saying approve the forms as presented to you by the city manager tonight with direction to me to prepare an ordinance for the next council reading to delete the requirement that income tax returns be produced when they apply for a business license.
Correct.
All right, and that's what we said about 20 minutes ago also, right?
It is. Yes.
And Councilwoman Price, would you accept an amendment to reimburse Mrs. Nix her $90?
I will. I don't think that...
That could actually be a separate item.
That should be.
Separate item? Okay, we'll vote on this.
Any other discussion then on the item on the table? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
That's a resolution, right, Mr. City Attorney?
It's going to be an ordinance. It's going to be an ordinance, right?
No, tonight is a resolution.
Resolution tonight.
Thank you.
Followed by two ordinance. Now, can I move to reimburse Mrs. Nix her $90?
You know, the only concern I have with that at all would be this policy has been in effect, or we've been handling it, this kind of thing, for how many years? Who knows? Many, many years. And we've talked a lot about fairness, and we need to be fair. And all these years we've been charging people for the work that the city staff had to do. And now we're saying all of a sudden that we're not going to charge for this. I just have the question here. What is fair? What am I missing here?
Well, there's a difference between, as we talked about when Mrs. Abney was at the dais, somebody coming in saying, I want a report of all the new businesses in the city every month, and they're going to use that for business purpose. I think it's very appropriate to charge the fees for generating that report. In this particular case, and I'm not going to beat a dead horse, in this particular case, Mrs. Nix was acting in the public interest to get the word out. There was criticism from this dais that there weren't enough businessmen in the audience, and she heard that. And she made a concerted effort to get more businesses here, and she was quite successful. We saw that last week. There were a lot more businesses. There were some businesses that we haven't seen here for a long time, some people that haven't been at council for a long time. So she was very successful, and she was successful because she had that report. I don't think she acted for personal gain. I think she acted in the public interest, and that's the reason that I made the motion in this particular case to reimburse her the $90. I feel it's a very appropriate thing to do.
You know, Councilman DeWar, the only concern I have with that is there may be an issue affecting another segment of our citizens that even though we advertise as we are required to do and get the word out just as good as we know how to do that with the email addresses that we have at hand, that some citizen may feel as though they need to print a flyer and mail it out to a list of our citizens because we didn't do it properly. I think we're opening a Pandora's box if we do this. We have not done this in the past, and I don't think we need to start tonight.
It sounds like to me when Richard was saying all the things that he did that we really went overboard compared to the norm. Now, I may be wrong on that. But you did go to a lot of efforts. You sent out to the people that you had, the 13 or whatever the number was. I put it in a paper. It seems to me that, and only Kim and only you perhaps can tell me whether that's over and above, because I don't follow all these things to see what's done. But normally I think it's just an article in the paper. I'm not against this. I'm dealing with fairness here. And what do we tell other people when they come to us and say, look, you did this here, you ought to do it for me. And there are a lot of different reasons people ask for freedom of information. It's just not for their own business purposes.
We have got about 80 years City of Aiken City Council experience here tonight. How many of you can tell me the last time anybody ever requested to be reimbursed for a Freedom of Action request?
Well, I think you're opening the gate tonight.
Mr. Mayor.
Why don't you open the gate, Councilmember Wells? I mean, can't we be reasonable and rational? We're given a...
Sir, I think we have been reasonable and rational.
Well, I don't think so. We're given a specific situation. It's not a personal gain thing. It's not going to help her do business any better. It's simply in a public interest. We took 12 months to respond to these folks. 12 months. Six or seven, 12 meetings, I think I counted in my opening comments. I just think it's fair to reimburse her. If y'all don't, then it's democracy rules.
I would like to state this. How many of you made a phone call? How many of you sent a letter out? Don, did you send anything out? Did you ask? Wait, let me finish my statement, then you can answer me. This is to the point of ridiculous. If you want to say fair, this is a meeting that you called. I called and asked, how are you going to be contacting the small businesses? I asked Richard that, and he said, it'll be on our website.
No, what I
said
is
the paper.
That is not correct. What I said is we would notify this meeting of council as we do all meetings of council.
Did you really think that the small businesses were going to find you in the classified ad section? That is not reasonable. Did you really think that they were going to say, oh, got nothing else to do today, I'm going to look at the City of Aiken's website? There had to be someone that said, this night, this place, be there, and this is why. This is ridiculous, and this is part of the problem you have with small businesses. You're talking about fairness. Fairness was last week asking the people who were coming to intimidate us if they had time to wait for the small businesses to speak first, when the small businesses were the ones who left their businesses and came to speak, because that's why we thought we were coming. Now, what you do here tonight, $90, what is $90? It's an indicator of what you do feel with small businesses. And believe me, they're already upset that this has occurred. You did not show good faith, Richard, in what you did. Even though that's what you've done in the past, it was not enough. The businesses would not have been here had I depended on that, and I understood that. So I took it in my, I did it myself, and I paid for it. And not only did I pay for it, but I spent hours, I spent 2 weeks out of my business so that the small businesses could come. The mayor wanted to hear them. The mayor was going to hear them, whatever it took. And that's what I did. Now, if you guys think that the small businesses would have shown up last week because you were in the legal section of the classified ads and because you were on the website, that is wrong. They would not have. They would not have known that. And I don't care if that is your policy. If your true intent was to let the small businesses know, true intent, and your concern was that they would be here, then there would have been a letter mailed, period, or a telephone call.
Ms. Nix, you and I discussed the notice that I was going to provide. We provided the regular notice that we would for a council meeting, and to the extent that we had email addresses of small business folks who came to the forum, who responded to the online survey, and it's more than 13, it was a couple of dozen folks. And to the extent that I have the knowledge of those folks that were specifically interested in this issue over and above our normal advertisement, we contacted those folks and gave them a copy of the agenda.
Isn't that discrimination? But the other people didn't deserve to get an email? You had their email addresses.
We did provide notice.
But you discriminated.
We're not going to agree on that, Ms. Nix.
That's the truth.
Ms. Nix, that's your view, and you and I are not going to agree on that. We provided the notice of council meetings that we always provide. We discussed this at Horizons. We originally were going to have a meeting on March 7th. You asked that that be continued. We met back in November, and after that meeting, I thoroughly understood that you would provide us with the interested parties who were particularly interested in this issue.
But
I
not
have
at
to
this
take
meeting.
Exception that we made folks wait a year. We had a meeting in the summertime. We followed that up with an online survey. We presented a report to council. We had a one-on-one meeting. You were going to organize, and we were more than anxious to get that information. We put in the strategic plan that the city of Aiken is going to work with small businesses. And we have been taking action. And when I specifically brought this up before, you mentioned that you had been out ill. Certainly, that's unfortunate. But again, we are always happy to provide notice to folks that express an interest. So I have to take exception with the assertions you're making tonight, because over and above how we normally notify a council meeting, specific small business entities that said they were interested in this issue were given notice with the information I had.
But what you did in the past when there was a meeting called is you sent out letters to the businesses for your meeting. There was not a letter sent out for this meeting. And regardless of whatever you say about this, the businesses would not have known. The turnout would not have been the same. You can admit that. That is the truth. And because the letters were sent out, the people came.
I don't see it your way, Ms. Nix, because what we had in the summertime was a public forum. It was not a council meeting.
And this was critical.
We publicized that because the small business, we had two separate meetings in council chamber about what could the city do, what could the city do. And the consensus of the group in the room was to have a public forum focused on small business, just as we did for this strategic plan update. That's why we followed the format we filed. And we did send out 2,000 invitations, and there were about 35 people that came to that meeting and said they were interested and signed up and provided their email address. Now, I understand tonight that you're not satisfied with the notice that was given. Believe me, you've said it several times. I got the message. But my point is, I did use that list in the past, and you said that was a good thing to do. So again, we will give notice. My office stays open. We answer the telephone. Anybody that expressed interest in this issue, we certainly made an effort to contact, just like after last Monday's meeting. We had a sign-up sheet, and we had, give us your name, give us your email address, because with whatever we developed from last night's work session, we wanted to make sure that those people that were interested, you know, could be contacted. I had two email addresses.
When you are discussing something as important as a business license, that's different than the put the dot. And by the way, I polled and talked to the business people, and they said they weren't coming to that meeting because it was they weren't even being recognized there. We got to stick dots. And that's why they didn't show up. But regardless of that, you sent a letter out for that. And if you think that these people that were here last week would have been there from a notification in the legal section of the newspaper and on the website, I'm a business owner. That's not going to work. But regardless, regardless of that, Richard, here's the thing. For the public and everybody to understand, you weren't even willing. And you can hide behind your Freedom of Information Act. Your attorneys just told you can reimburse this money. Now, I'm out untold amounts of money out of my own pocket because I believe if a group like small businesses are treated this way by city council, what chance does an individual in our community have a chance standing up here alone? And that is why I do what I do. It's why I put the money into it. It's why I put the work into it. You've got to get back, and you've got to recognize that we are the people that voted you in, and we are the people that you should be listening to and helping. And what you're doing right now is so indicative of how we are treated as businesses every day by you and your administration. I hear it on the phone. I hear it on the emails. I hear it in letters from people who are business owners. Well, this is how we feel. It's just this creates such friction between you and small businesses.
By all means, send it into my office. I mean, I appreciate you sharing that tonight. I've had nothing from you at all. We sat down, Councilmember Ebner, and you and Ms. Vauders and Katie Lipscomb and I sat down and talked about this and talked about ways to establish that contact with the small business community. And I have to take exception to what you're saying into the record tonight. The attitude that we had in that November meeting is the attitude that I have today. I remain very open to the business community. My wife and I shop locally in Aiken. I have actually used Southern Plumbing and Electrical to do electrical work at my mother's house in North Augusta. So we certainly stay very open to the business community. The business community in Aiken does a great deal towards the success of Aiken. And I can't sit here tonight and have you paint me into this corner of being someone who is promoting friction or some kind of distance between myself and small business. I spend a lot of time talking with a lot of business owners and go to several meetings a month that involves business owners from all across Aiken. And just as I talk with them every week, just as I'm talking to you now, just as we sat down with you last fall and encouraged you to provide suggestions to us about how to establish that contact with the small business community, I still sit here tonight with that same open, willing to discuss attitude. And I think really it's a disservice to come in and lambast me personally, just as you lambasted my staff Monday night last week. We're here to help, but we have to be given an opportunity to help. I hear that you don't see it that way, but I tell you, these concerns that you talk about tonight in the room, I'd love to have an opportunity to sit down with folks, because I get dozens of calls a week from folks with different concerns. And the thing I do every day, and I've written about this, is we try to address those concerns and we try to handle the problems. What you brought up tonight, I just haven't had anything from anybody in my office. If they come into my office, we will handle it. If there's an opportunity to have a meeting and discuss this, we welcome that opportunity to discuss it. Well, this current presentation that you're giving doesn't, you know, appear to me to be, we need to discuss, and these are the issues, and this is who needs to come. I'm more than willing to set those kind of meetings up, just like we did back in the fall with you and Katie and Dee Dee. I mean, that attitude remains constant.
Richard, did you really believe that they were going to come from the legal section of the newspaper and the website?
Mr. Mayor, can I jump in? Debbie, I think we've gone about as far as we can on this issue, and I think there's going to be a disagreement. I have a motion to reimburse you, and I'd like to get on. We have other people here, and I think we're going to have to agree to disagree. I support your request for the $90. I may be the only one on the council that does it, but it's time to move on. I hope you'll agree.
I do agree. I do agree.
Thank you. You're a good fighter.
Let's make sure we understand that if this is approved, it's approved because this is a special situation.
Yes, and in my judgment, in the public interest.
Everybody understand that? The other freedom of information requests we've had in the past that I'm somewhat familiar with have not been like this. I would have to say that. And we're talking about $90?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I'm going to support that. because I do think it's different than what I've seen. And I think we can, you know, if we have to in the future, I think we can explain why we're doing this. Okay. We have a motion. I'll second it. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor.
Okay. This is for, what is the motion?
To reimburse Mrs. Nix for
$90.
$90.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. All right, let's make sure we've got hands. Whose hand's up? Beverly, was yours up?
4-2.
Okay. All right. Opposed? Done. Okay.
I do want to say that the very first thing we said tonight when we began our discussion was that I asked the city manager and the mayor if he would draft an ordinance. And the city manager and the attorney both agreed that they would draft an ordinance with the business license and include in that the date for submission of fees would be the next business day if the deadline is on a weekend. And I guess that should have been the end of that because they did agree to that. Now, I don't know that we need a motion for them to do that, but they did verbally agree, and it's in the minutes that they agreed to do that.
We'll have it on the agenda for the 11th.
Be on the agenda.
That's a dead issue,
yeah, but,
I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I would like to say during the course of this discussion, there's been some reference to me not caring about small businesses, and it's been mentioned several times at different meetings, and that is certainly not true. A member of my family has a small business and has had for 11 years. I first came to Aiken in 1953, and although I haven't been here that whole time, I've shopped small businesses. I do it every week in some fashion. And to say something like that, that I don't care for small businesses, is just so far out, it's hard for me to even explain why someone would say that. So I just want to clear the record. I want to tell everybody that I care for small businesses. We got a lot of issues at council, and many of them are not easy, and many of them take a lot of time to think through. And just because a person might sit here and not say a whole lot, doesn't mean they don't care. It doesn't mean they're not thinking. And so for the record, I like small businesses. I support small businesses. Okay, moving on.
Mr. Mayor, I've got to say this because this has lingered with me since our last meeting. We had personal attacks on our staff at our last meeting. And personal attack, our personal comments about one of our members, or our elected official's spouse. I'd like to go on record for you to consider that we have an exercise of decorum in these chambers, and that any personal attacks made on someone in the audience, a person will be given two warnings. Following those warnings, they have to cease from making comments. Any personal attacks made on someone's spouse, they will be given those same warnings. While we want to do what the citizens ask and request and listen to them, we have to consider what is fair and what is right. And it's just not right to attack, personally call staff's names out and attack anyone in the audience. That's going below the belt, as if I can label it as that. We'll take anything, attack us as council, but when you start attacking staff personally and spouses personally, that's below the belt.
Okay. Let's take that under advisement and work up something that perhaps we all can agree, and it probably ought to be said, or at least in the on our agenda perhaps.
Thank you.
And even if we have to admit it or repeat it every meeting, we can do something to that effect.
You do have the right, Mr. Mayor, to require disruptive discussions to be conducted outside of council chambers. And certainly what Ms. Price is describing could be characterized as such. I don't know if you need to adopt a new policy or anything. You already have it within your parliamentary procedure.
I think we need to state that, because this would be, you don't know who
well,
you got in the audience.
I think inside. So. For many years, you didn't have to worry about that kind of thing, but for whatever reasons, maybe part of its economy or whatever, perhaps we just have to ask people to be respectful, remind them to be respectful, and treat each other like they would like to be treated. And that's all in the world we ever asked for. And that's the least we can do, I think. Okay, the next item on the agenda, approval of landscape plan.
Mr. Mayor, there were two people standing.
I'm sorry.
I'm not so sure they
did. Did you gentlemen want to speak? Okay.
Hello, I'm Harry Nix, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I live at 808 Woodward Street. And this is really after the fact, I suppose. I regret that Councilman Homoki is not here. We had a conversation on the sidewalk, a very amicable conversation after the meeting last week. And he had mentioned in the meeting last week something about 3 years, a sunset clause to try out changing how things were worked, how they were done. And as we were speaking outside, he made a comment to me. He said, I recognize that we really didn't need to do that because this was a policy and it's something that we could change anytime we wanted to. And I just wanted to come forward earlier and mention that. It's my support of what Dee Dee Vaughters had mentioned and what my wife had mentioned, that this become an ordinance, which you folks had moved forward on. But I wanted to make that public record. I regret he was not here because he may remember it a little differently, but that was the basis. So
right.
I certainly appreciate you moving forward on that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Harry. Thank you.
Just one comment. You need to be very careful about freedom of speech. That is
about what?
About freedom of speech whenever you take your advisement.
Be very careful. Yes, sir.
I'm Davis Cheek, 1320 Lee Lane. Since you're going to be working on this ordinance, you can change other components in it other than what we talked about tonight. Is that correct?
That was not council's motion, sir.
Was it?
Council's motion was to delete the requirement to present or delete the ability to present a income tax return. That's what they voted on tonight.
So that would be the only part of the ordinance that you're going to work on?
It's a new ordinance.
That was their direction to me, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm concerned about is the penalty an enforcement device within the ordinance. And I've sent Mr. Duar and Ms. Price my views on that, and I would hope that that could be put before the rest of the council to change that particular part of the ordinance. We got several things here that aren't that aren't working for me here. Right here on the license, it says that if you operate without a license, it's a violation of city ordinance, and or fine or imprisonment of both. I think that needs to be a change. That seems to be pretty rough. Also, in the next section right down here, it says that the report has to score correspond with records of businesses, the report same file, so on and so forth, IRS, South Carolina Department of Revenue, so on and so forth. And then on the back page of it, you also say here in the second paragraph, just about the bottom line, but should correspond to your 2010 tax return as reported to the federal and state governments. Here's the problem I got with that. I have to file as sole proprietor. So my total gross income, no matter where it's from, has to go still, according to this, has to be reported as a total gross. You've got no clause in there for sole proprietorships. We have other income in our business. I have other income as a manufacturer's representative. But because the way I have to file as a sole proprietor, you have no provision in there for me to deduct it without having a business license. And there's no way that I get a business license. I get a check from my employer. But I have to include that within my return. So I'd like to get that adjusted. I'd like to see something done that we don't have. What if you got the investment income? You don't have a city license for that. And the only way it's addressed to be able to do any kind of a deduction like that is by you have to have a city license at another municipality. So that needs to be looked at and readjusted. And I think you need to make a provision in there for sole proprietorships to be able to deduct income that is not related to doing business in a city of Aiken.
Are you talking about a business outside the city?
No.
You're talking inside the city.
As a sole proprietor, I have to put everything that I earn from working for other companies, whatever, into my total gross. And I'm having to pay the city a partial tax on that because of the way that you asked me to report my earnings.
That's based on the state statute that requires the business license fee to be levied on gross receipts. That's really a complaint for the state level because we have to go by the state statute. That's what came out last Monday night's meeting. You want a deduction from your gross receipts, and we can't do that.
There needs to be a way for us to be able to deduct that. That is not, because here's the thing. If I start to deduct that, and I go ahead and I file for my business license, it's going to show a drop in what my gross income is. Because I don't believe you're entitled to tax me on earnings that I get as an employee of another company.
Mr. Cheeks, it just goes to the state statute that says we have to levy the business license fee on the gross receipts of a business.
And there's no way to amend that?
No, that's
at the state level it could be, but not at the local level. We have to go by state law. That's what our attorney and Mr. Crow was explaining.
But it's gross receipts, not gross income. It's gross receipts.
Gross receipts.
But it's still the way it has to be filed. It comes in the same way. As far as the enforcement device of the ordinance, I think we need to be more business friendly. I think we need to get rid of the word audit. That's a very ugly word. And I think we need to go to a verification process. You two have the you have my notes on that, and I wish you'd bring it up and discuss it with the rest
of
the
council. I did early when I asked the question about audit.
I really do.
And to define audit as not necessarily going in looking at every bit of number, it is simply for our purposes, in most cases, I would expect it to be a verification of the numbers, and the person, the staff person, would simply go in to look at the numbers.
Well, that's not the way it's written in the ordinance.
Well, I know, but we always have to, we all want to think everybody's a good guy here, but we might come across some bad guys who want to evade taxes, so we always have the right to audit. And I would expect that we wouldn't audit in a major way very often, but we have to retain that right. I think in most cases, I would expect the finance department to have a question about the numbers, and it would be resolved very quickly. But if we've got a business that wants to fight us and not pay and not do it the way it's supposed to be done, then I think the staff has to have the right to go in and audit to whatever degree they need to make sure that it's a fair program. Everybody's going to pay on the same gross receipt amount.
And unfortunately, we have had to do that in the past.
So I think we need to keep that right. I appreciate your concern, but obviously, if it gets abused, I would expect you and other business owners to let us know. But
yeah. Okay. And Mr. Mayor, I want to apologize to you. I made comment about your wife last week. I probably wouldn't have said it unless you hadn't brought that up yourself early on in the meeting that your wife runs a small business. But I also do want to thank you because you have done business with my small business. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Mr. Mayor, I do have a question for our city attorney. Some of the businesses that have spoke before us, I know, are retired and probably receiving Social Security. Is that considered gross receipts?
I mean, it depends on how they file their income tax return. If they file like Mr. Cheeks as a sole proprietorship, they're not required to file as a sole proprietorship.
Right.
They could file as an LLC or another small corporation, and then the gross receipts from that one business would be separated from their personal income.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure because I've talked to a couple people. I know their business is in Aiken, and they also receive Social Security.
Yeah, but I mean,
and a pension too.
If they're filing as a sole proprietorship, whatever form of income they're deriving, is going to show up in their income tax return.
Thank you. And again, that goes back to a question that I asked last week of, if you may all recall, the woman who had been doing this for about 10 years, and I asked her, if you were coming in right now, do you think what we are putting out to small business is sufficient to help you comply with our rules? And her answer was no. So it's still a challenge to make sure that whatever we create to give to a business to help them comply with our requirement for a business license tax, it ought to be in simple language, easy to understand, very clear.
I agree.
Social Security question, defined gross receipts. I mean, I still think we need to do as much as we can
process. You know, you help people out with their income tax returns during this time of the year, and
yes.
You know probably better than I do how complicated our tax code is. And I'm not, you know, I've been through 3 years of law school and 20 years of practicing. I'm not qualified to give somebody tax advice. And somebody who really knows their stuff needs to be able to give that kind of advice to people.
The business license is gross receipts of the business.
We need to move on here a little bit.
Thank you.
Okay.
Ready for the
finally.
SPCA?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. The SPCA has been before you before, back in 2008 when they filed in their concept plan for the annexation of their 10-acre parcel on Willow Run. That is for the construction of the SPCA building. We provided you with copies of that, Mayor. They now have their landscape plan for council review and pre-approval. It has been reviewed by the planning department. Director Evans is here tonight. Barbara Nelson is here, along with Tilda Hildebrand from the SPCA, to answer questions that council may have. We're here tonight for council consideration and the approval of the landscape plan for the SPCA building project on Willow Run Road. Mr. Evans has asked that planning staff be authorized to approve any minor changes deemed necessary once grading and utility plans for this project have been submitted.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Is anyone in the audience want to speak on this issue?
No.
Would you like to? Yeah, please. Yeah.
Good evening. I'm Tilden Hildebrand with Hassan Hildebrand, and there were a few questions that came up in the review process, and I will be very brief. One of the primary questions was the square footage of the building. When the plan was submitted initially, of course, that's kind of hard to read from here, but the label of the square footage of the building was initially 20,000 square feet. Over the course of the design of the building, the footprint has been revised somewhat, and the current footprint shows 25,000 square feet. However, neither of those are correct. The architect evidently has some standard footprint that he uses. He does a lot of these, and he has a 20,000 square foot footprint and a 25,000 square foot footprint, I assume. And just to keep the numbers straight, the initial submittal that was in your package previously was 22,615 square feet, and the newest and final footprint is 22,560 square feet. So basically the same, and the footprints are the same previously and now. A statement was made at a previous presentation also by Ms. Nelson that discussed removal of trees. And if you would look at the slide that's up on the board, that statement was made based on the footprint that you see, which is a 22,000 square foot building with approximately the same parking area, which encompasses about 1 acre, which is roughly 40,000 square feet. And I'm going to change slides and show you something real quick. In the process of designing this site, which has a variation in grades from approximately a 12-foot cut or removal of soil in the front area here to a 7-foot fill in the back area here, that roughly 1 acre, 40,000 square foot footprint has grown into a 4.5 acre disturbance. And in that disturbance, there's been additional trees that needed to be removed. So there was, you know, early discussion about a number of trees being removed, and that number has grown as the site has been graded, and that was explained by Ms. Nelson in her response to one of the questions. And finally, the plan has evolved into this plan that's in your package, which is the final landscape plan for the site. And we've had several meetings with the planning staff to come to this point, which involves a number of small trees under a power line on two sides, a number of large trees that line the driveway and surround the site. And basically, we focused on the area of the site that was being developed and came up with the final plan, which falls about 86 inches short of the required planting, which will be compensated for by making a contribution to the tree bank. And we did this in working with the staff. We could have planted trees in this open area, but we felt it would be best to concentrate the plantings over into the developed site with larger trees, and we came up with this final plan with their assistance.
So everything meets the policy and...
That's correct.
Copacetic?
That is correct.
Okay. Barbara, you want to say anything?
I'd be happy to answer any questions for you as much as I possibly can. In looking at it, if you really understood what the symbols meant on the vegetation there, I think you would say this is going to be a beautiful facility when it's done. Not only the building itself, but the landscaping around it. Those large circles that you see along the driveway, those are all live oaks. So think south boundary at some point in the distant future. We are, as I said from the very beginning of this project, trying to be good citizens. We are building what we believe to be something that will be a contribution aesthetically to the city of Aiken, as well as to improving its animal control. And I think anybody will be, in future years, very pleased to walk on the campus of the Aiken SPCA. But I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions? Looks good to me.
Does look good.
Okay, do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? None? Show of hands, please. Okay, passes unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Okay, item two, first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 127 Cedarwood Park. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Dent and Jane Moore own just under 3/4 of an acre on a lot at 127 Cedarwood Park. That's in the Westwood Hills subdivision. They're requesting annexation of a single-family dwelling under the RS-15 zone. The Planning Commission voted unanimously to approve this annexation at their March 16th meeting, Mayor. This is an ordinance for that annexation for council consideration.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the ordinance to annex property at 127 Cedarwood Park.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Discussion? If none, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item three, first reading of an ordinance to amend the city code regarding issuing permits to peddle or solicit in the city of Aiken. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you so much. We have had a peddling ordinance in this town forever. The most current version of the code goes all the way back to 1980. It's occurred to public safety in issuing these peddling permits for solicitation or solicitation of a donation for a charitable purpose that if somebody came in and asked for a peddler's permit, we needed to issue a peddler's permit. With advanced technology and the system that public safety now has in place, Chief Frommer met with our city solicitor, Ben Moore, to discuss the opportunity to conduct criminal background checks on these peddlers who come in. It's a public safety consideration, and certainly the only change that's being proposed under this ordinance is to allow the opportunity under the registration section for the public safety director to deny a permit for someone who has been convicted of a felony. So this is consideration of that additional language on first reading.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I'll move that we approve first reading of an ordinance to amend the city code regarding issuing permits to peddle or solicit in the city of Aiken.
Okay, I'll second it. Any discussion? John?
John Wade. I need some clarification on it. In the first part, the first sentence on the first page, it said this section requires a person not having an established place of business in the city. I'm not opposed, well, let me start off saying I'm not opposed to background checks and stuff on people going door to door, but in the way that I read it, it looks like that it's going to affect any business that's outside the city of Aiken that wants to do any type of service. I'm going to take me as an example. Move my business outside the city of Aiken, and now I've got to go to Pete to get a background check that I don't have a problem on. But when I get into the regulations or the registration, then I've got a problem with some of how that's controlled. And so what my question is this ordinance going to affect every business that's outside the city of Aiken, or is it just going to affect a business that's peddling a one-time thing from door to door? And if it is, and part of that registration that says that they want a copy from the private property that they're going on to, let's see, 7 for such activities conducted at a location privately owned, a letter from the owner granting permission of such activities. If you're going door to door, I'm going to take my business now. I've got 10 people that call me. Do I go to Pete and get a letter from every customer who wants me to come there? And
that would not be the intent the way it's drafted, John, because you're an established business. You've got a business license. These would not be folks that have an annual business license. They're coming in. It would be like the summertime book sales people, somebody that's soliciting donations. If it's services or merchandise, somebody that's trying to drum up business that doesn't have an established business in the city limits of Aiken. This isn't advertising purposes. Mr. Moore's coming up behind you on the microphone. I think he's got an idea of some information he'd like to share as well.
Would this affect the Girl Scouts? Door-to-door cookie sales?
Yes, I don't think any of the Girl Scouts hopefully have criminal histories. But they certainly wouldn't be, they'd be juvenile records, now the people with them, the adults. I just think that this part of the ordinance is the way it's always been. Mm-hmm. And I think we're confusing a service business. It's not made to apply if someone calls a plumber from outside the city of Aiken and they do work at their house. It's actually these people who are uninvited and choose to go around peddling, trying to drum up business. Mr. Pierce pretty much explained it while I was walking up here, but it's not.
And not to paint you in a corner, Mr. Moore, but my understanding is most folks really do want the Girl Scout cookie folks to show up at their front door.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
A spouse who's particularly interested in Thin Mints, for example.
Yes, I like the peanut butter.
What?
Ben, this would include those people who came around last summer wanting to put up numbers on your houses. those selling books and dictionaries and whatever.
Exactly.
I think we need
to. And it's a legitimate question to ask them if they have obtained a peddler's permit, because I know folks do ask that.
Right.
Beverly, I had someone put a notice on my front door. For cleaning the outside of the house or something like that, and they just had a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave it to Richard, Pete, and
we tracked
so they did took some action on it.
That's right.
That kind of thing we're
right.
talking about.
But the intent, this is for people who are coming to our citizens, not to people our citizens call to come to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really the
exactly.
difference.
You see the difference, John? Typically, they would have called you for service. Does that address
don't go away, Jen.
I did hear what Mr. Moore is saying. I just, does that need to be worded differently in there so that's addressed? Or am I missing the legal part?
The problem you're having is he's just showing you 28-2. You have to look at 28-1 to see who we're talking about. 28-1 tells us the kind of people we're talking about. It's in the city code.
Okay. Do we already have a law that deals with this already, solicitation?
Yes, yes. It's an existing law. The difference, and I've got that section if you need it, John.
The difference what?
The difference is you haven't, the public safety, yes, the public safety director does not have an opportunity to do this criminal background check. And, you know, if we've got someone who has a crime of moral turpitude or dishonesty, in the past, you just had to issue the permit. This gives the director of public safety the opportunity to refuse to issue the permit because of that prior conviction.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say John Wade now wants to go raise some money to fight cancer, and he decides that he's going to go door to door and solicit. He's already a businessman in the city. Under this ordinance, would you have to do a background check on him before you let him go?
He already has a city business license.
Yeah, but he didn't have to have a background check to get a city business license, did he?
Now, this, I think the distinction was you've got somebody that's going door to door.
Did anybody get a copy?
This requires him to have an established place of business. If you have an established place of business, then you don't have to get the peddler's permit.
Yeah, but I was asked by a business person who has an established place of business, but who does go throughout the community soliciting for charitable purposes.
Then they would not be affected by this.
They're separate and apart from their businesses.
As long as they have an established place of business in the city.
And where does it say that?
281A.
Oh, the one you just handed me. Okay.
Paragraph A.
It shall be unlawful for any person not having an established place of business in the city to go upon private property in the city for the purpose of peddling or selling goods, wares, merchandise, or services, or soliciting donations for any purpose.
And
it has not been requested or invited to do so.
What is the religious group that comes by every Saturday that knocks on our doors? Jehovah's Witness.
If they have a place of business in the city of Aiken, they're okay. If they don't, they need a peddler's permit.
They don't have, and you see different ones on Saturday morning.
The permit doesn't cost anything. In most cases, once you fill it out, within hours, we'll have it approved.
And Chief, from my understanding is they can apply online.
They can apply online, too.
What's precipitate this, Ms.?
Because over the last year, we've had people... and a lot of people out of state applying for permits to go in your neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And I can tell you, you don't want those people in your neighborhood. You see the criminal records, 4, 5, and 6 pages long, some of them just out of prison for felony type offenses.
What do they want to do, Chief? I'm just curious.
Anything from selling plumbing to siding to landscape to.
Okay.
And I can tell you, I don't want those people in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would scare you to see the criminal records. But the way the ordinance is now, all I can do is issue a permit. I can't tell them no. And what I do now is I make sure the owner of the company, I will issue the permit and tell him it is my recommendation that you talk to some of your employees because they have criminal records that you probably don't want them in neighborhoods.
does it need to address the issue that it does not apply to political solicitation?
That's something I can look at for the next reading. Honestly, I hadn't researched.
When I campaigned, there was a neighborhood, I don't remember which one it was, it said no soliciting, and I said, they don't mean me.
Right, but right. That's a good question.
But they got me on the way out and said, right. What are you doing?
Right. Well, some people call me a solicitor, so that's tough too.
Now, let me ask a question. As long as you've got a business in the city, you can be a peddler, so to speak.
You could promote the business. Right.
That's like an extension.
Okay, that's my question. The business. You can't go out and do something else. I mean, suppose you have the plumbing business, since we brought that up, but you want to go sell or sell something else, whatever it may be. Is that allowable? Or do you have to stick with the nature of your business?
Our current ordinances, and there are several, that deal with peddlers does not address that. So that's something I would like us to address. Let's say you're going outside of...
I mean, I couldn't see the reasoning here. I could if you have a business and that's what you're trying to sell.
Right.
Or peddle. But if you have a business and then you decide you want to go into two or three other things, you could do that. And that would be okay.
Right. I think it begs the question of whether you'd need to get another business license for this.
Well, that's what I'm
new
wondering.
Enterprise that
that's what I'm
you're
thinking.
Going into, and that might be covered under business licenses.
It is.
Already.
You license the business operation, Kim. That's correct. I mean, you can have several different businesses at one location. They each require a separate business license.
So if that's happening, then you really need to get another license for that business, whatever you're trying to peddle.
That certainly establishes it as a business when you think about it, Mayor, because you pay that business license fee.
That's correct.
I could see somebody opening up some little business, having a business license, and then they're going out there and peddling five or six things or 20 things or 10 things or whatever, and they're not related to what the business license covers.
And I think in that scenario, they're clearly in violation of the business license ordinance.
Yeah.
They would need to have the business license, and they would violate the peddler's ordinance, too.
Of course, that's a little off of what Pete's getting to, he needs to do the job right.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's just a question I had.
Ben, I think this might not be effective if we don't make people aware of it, because what happened last summer is the lady up the street who is a senior citizen called me. Well, I'm a senior citizen, but she's older than I am, and she lives alone.
She's more senior.
And she said that the gentleman told her that we were all getting this thing in front of our house that posts the address of the house, and it's wrought iron, and she had to pay so much for it, and we were all getting it, and that we wanted everybody to have the same kind of thing in the neighborhood and on the street. And that was not the case, because he did not come to us. And I think they were just trying to sell these things to as many people. But if you don't tell people that you have to ask them for a permit or whatever, that they're going to go into these neighborhoods and nobody will know anything about this that we're passing tonight.
Well, I think that's a good point.
Yeah. And I think once council adopts an ordinance, we can certainly push that out in the news, the water bill newsletter that goes to 16,000 customers, so they'll have that.
I think we need to make them aware of something like this.
Right, because I think most people would assume that it's legal. And
we are stubborn, and we want to be hospitable, and so we have a hard time turning people away.
Right.
And I think the older you are, the more that's the case.
And that's exactly the people we're trying to protect.
Okay.
So if someone leaves a flyer on my porch saying that they want to do X amount of business, to consider them, I'm to call you to let you know that?
Yes. And then we contact the person and ask them, do you have a business license to be selling this? And if the answer is no, we tell them, you need to get a peddler's permit and you need to get a business license if you want to do business in the city.
I say that with hesitation, because small businesses have to use different means to market themselves, and and they can't afford the TV, the newspaper. They're getting started, but yeah. But if they have no background problem, that's not an issue. They just go.
Well, if they have a business, it's no problem.
Okay, if I if